And to just reflect that it's the first day of the last quarter, the fourth quarter of the year. We are nearing towards the end of 2022, which had its own ups and downs. But it's a time where we would really know that our department and our PDEs are preparing for the matric writings and the results, of course, which we're going to get next year, which we wish them well in those preparations, not forgetting Omalusi as well, that will be moving up and down to make sure that everything is well. But also to say that recently, we've seen that Gauteng has redeployed MEC to be the premier at Lesufi in Gauteng, which is one of MECs that was popular in the sector. And I think from our side as the portfolio committee, we are wishing him well in his new environment, hoping that he will be able to carry the people of Gauteng very well, and of course welcoming the new MEC that is taking the control of our education sector, which we trust that he will continue. And I don't know if he will be able to fit in the shoes of Premier Lesufi, but we are wishing him very well.
Recording in progress.
As well. Today we are dealing with the AG. We are dealing with the FFC, and later on we are going to get a briefing from the internal audit from DPE. The AG is lined up for other meetings, so they therefore ask that we start with them. I am going to chair this meeting of the AG, because we will do them once we interact with them so that we can be able to release them. And then afterwards, I'm going to ask the whip to chair the meeting with the FSC. I will be part of the meeting. And then we are going to adjourn and reconvene at 4 o'clock, where we are going to proceed with the internal audit. On that note, Llewellyn, can you help us with the roll call?
Thank you, Chairperson. I have yourself, Honourable Bika Zigaba. I have Honourable Aduins, Honourable Siwela, Honourable Letse, Honourable Yabo, Honourable Moratekla. I have Honourable Nodada, Honourable Van der Walt, and Honourable Van Zyl. I have Honourable Sukers and Honourable Dr. Boshoff present. I have two apologies for both Honourables Mashabela and Honourable Dr. Tembe Kwayo. I've also received the apology for the Minister, who's unfortunately she's due in a cabinet meeting this morning. And then I do know that the DG has indicated he's in one of the provinces, Chair, and may have connectivity problems, but he has logged in, and we hope that he's able to keep connected with us. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. But we do have the DM in the meeting, ne?
Chair, I'll just have to check. I'm not sure. I didn't see her on the platform, but I will just double check with Mr. Mahala.
DM O'Connor. Okay, members, that is our agenda. As I have outlined, that we are having the briefing from the FSC. We are having the briefing from AXA, and then we are going to have the briefing on the internal audit from the committee. And then we are going to consider, and adopt the meeting in the last meeting, which is the 4 o'clock meeting. Can I get members to adopt the agenda?
Chairperson, my inconspicuous hand is up.
Yes.
I rise to move that to this agenda be adopted as is.
Thank you very much, Principal. Any second?
Chairperson, I second.
Thank you very much, Rizuela. Siabonga. Thank you very much, honorable members, for adopting the agenda. I'm not intending to waste time then. DG, can you hear us?
No, you see, no? But at the end, no network there.
Oh, okay. Okay. And then on that note, let me, Gabo, morning.
Good morning, Honorable Chair. Good morning to the members as well.
Let me hand over to you then.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair. Good morning again, Honorable Members. Just introduction, I am Gabo Kamati. I'm the Business Executive in the AGSA. I'm accompanied by Mr. Joshua Baganzi. I'll just ask him to switch on the camera quickly. He's the Senior Manager overseeing Department of Basic Education. I also have Dr. Tagalane Rambau. He is a Senior Manager and Education Specialist. That's part of my team. And lastly, I also have Ms. Biltish Ken, who's also a Senior Manager Specialist in Infrastructure. Those will be the members from the AGSA, Honorable Chair, that are joining this meeting this morning. From the AGSA, we are grateful again for the committee having extended the invitation through to our office just to share with the members our observation from the audit outcome of 21-22 financial year. In the presentation, Honorable Chair, we have about three sections. The first section of our presentation will speak to the Department of Basic Education with its entities, SAIS and UMELUSI. The second part of the presentation would just share the sector outcome across all nine provinces. And one of the things you'll notice there is that all provinces submitted the financial statement on time, which is great, as a sector, except for one, which is the Northwest. It was only finalized yesterday. They submitted end of July. And the last part of the presentation, Chair, will mainly talk to the value add work that we've done within the sector. And in there, we'll also touch on the work that we've done on infrastructure, the work that we've done on nutrition, and the work that we've done on the employment initiative. As part of the audit outcome for both the DBE and the sector, we'll touch on the material irregularities that would have issued to the accounting officers within the sector. And we'll just provide an update in terms of what would they have committed to and what would have been the outcome where they've been finalized. The mission of the AGSA and the vision, familiar with the committee by now, really at the core of it, we exist to be an enabler to this committee. Therefore, we remain grateful as you indulge us every now and again when you are overseeing the department. I'll just ask that Joshua move to the next slide. This slide, Honorable Chair and members, you're going to start to see it quite a lot in the presentation of the AGSA. This is really just amplifying the role of all stakeholders in just moving the sector forward, the education sector forward. Primarily, we will touch on the role of the officials, we will touch on the role of internal audit committees that we've been doing over a period of years. And we're basically saying this is a network that's supposed to complement one another. No role replaces each other and no role should not be discharging its responsibilities. What we are saying is that as a sector, we will be as strong as our weakest link in this particular network. As the AGSA, we are elevating each of these role players in the role that they play in ensuring accountability in the education sector. Again, we'll also touch on some of the entities, the role that the National Treasury play in just making sure that the education sector moves in the direction that was intended. So as we move in the future, as part of the culture shift for the AGSA, we're going to start to bring a lot out of this chain, Honorable Chair, you will see again our dependency on the portfolio committee in just elevating the work that the office does, in just making sure that it gets expression and the messages are landing in the right spaces and they're getting traction in terms of the people that are supposed to take it forward. So this is the stakeholder accountability network. We will continue to speak to it in many of our messages as we move into the future. Chair, without wasting any time, I wanted to ask Joshua to take us straight into the audit outcome of DBE together with the two entities and move in handing over to Dr. Rambau and Bilkis. Lastly, I'll come at the end as we appreciate the comments and the questions that the members may have. Chair, with your permission, may I please hand over to Mr. Baganzi. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, BE, and good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I'll take through the audit outcomes of the department and the two entities. I'll start off by looking at the audit outcomes over the period, over the last 3 years, number of years. Looking at the movement in outcomes from 2018-2019, which was the year of the first year of administration, of the current administration, but we also reflect on the audit outcomes for last year and the current year. Our color codings, like in the previous years, green means that it's unqualified with no findings on predetermined objective, and no findings on non-compliance with laws and regulations. And then yellow signifies unqualified with findings on either compliance with legislation or predetermined objective. And then the purple coloring is the one for qualified with findings. If you look at the slides currently on screen, the purple coloring was for the year 2018-2019, which is indicative of DBE being qualified for those years. But for the current year and the previous year, DBE is received a unqualified with findings. For the portfolio as a whole, we commend Umalusi for maintaining its unqualified with no finding audit outcome, similar to the prior year. We also encourage to see that DBE has also maintained unqualified opinion on the financial statements. However, similar to last year, there's still issues or weaknesses with regards to compliance with laws and regulations, as well as findings on performance reporting. The main control deficiencies that was dominant for the department was mainly due to non-compliance with supply chain processes, resulting in incurrence of irregular expenditure. Most of this irregular expenditure was caused by implementing agents due to inadequate project management, as well as inadequate coordination of these implementing agents. For SAFE as well, it was unqualified with findings, and those findings pertain to the audit of performance information. The processes for performance reporting remain a challenge for SAFE, resulting in inaccurate reporting. So, Chair, in a nutshell, the audit outcomes for the department and SAFE remain the same as it was in the prior, that's being unqualified with findings. And the findings for the department was due to non-compliance with laws and regulations, and then findings for SAFE was on predetermined objective. With Umalusi, there were no findings on either the compliance or performance information. And the next slide, I'll go into the financial management and the compliance aspects that we came across of the three entities. We'll first look at the key drivers of financial management controls for that enables or allows for quality financial reporting. And for the department, Umalusi, we're indicating that there is proper record keeping, while for this is still a concern, they still need to be as more work to be done with that regard. Daily and monthly controls, for Malusi we're saying good, for DBE and SAFE, still of a concern, and in-year and year-end reporting is still good for Umalusi, while for DBE and SAIS are still a concern. But mainly the main internal control driver that requires intervention, and that was the main cause of the compliance finding for the DBE, the review and monitoring of compliance. For the current year, we picked up material misstatements with regards to recording of irregular expenditure, which the department had to make adjustments to the financial statements and corrected those adjustments that we picked up with regards to irregular expenditure. And if you look at the middle table or bars or graphic, it shows that before we audited, the financial statements submitted by the department were not accurate, or therefore, because of a misstatement that we picked up, whilst for Umalusi and SAIS was accurate, and therefore we could not, we didn't do any modification required. But subsequent to the audit, or after the audit, for all the three entities, the financial statements were not modified, therefore resulting in unqualified opinions. So therefore, after we've audited the misstatements being affected by the department, there was then resulting in the department not achieving a qualification. The impact of the continued non-compliance is that it may lead to increment in irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure being incurred, and if irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure is incurred, it leaves their available funds to attend to service delivery needs of the department. Honorable Chair, the next slide, we're looking at the financial health of the department. And here we looked at two particular indicators in terms of revenue management or collection, as well as the expenditure management. With revenue management, we looked at how long does it take the department to collect amount of money that's due to them, while with expenditure management, we look at an expression of fruitless and wasteful expenditure the department, as well as how long do they take to settle amounts that's due to creditors or their accruals that's in their book. And after we have analyzed the financial health of the department, we concluded that it was concerning, mainly due to the delay in paying of accruals. And when you looked at the aging of the accruals that were in the books of the department, we noted that it took more than 30 days for the department to settle these accruals that have been outstanding for more than 30 days. And if you take long not to settle your accruals or to pay your suppliers, then you end up attracting interest, which might result into fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Furthermore, when we looked at the revenue, collection of revenue, we noted that it took the department on average 830 days to collect accrued departmental revenue as a result of the overpayments on the projects. And this is also due to the delays in finalizing the projects after they've reached the practical completion stage. Honorable Chair, I'll move on to our analysis of compliance with key legislation. Here we're looking at the key non-compliance areas that we picked up for the department. And in the main, the most common areas of non-compliance related to procurement and contract management for the department. We also had non-compliances due to consequence management. And then there was also non-compliance area relating to irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. We're indicating that compliance with laws and regulations continue to be an area of weakness for the department, particularly in the area of compliance with supply chain management prescripts, as well as consequence management. It's concerning that the department did not make sufficient progress in addressing these particular matters of non-compliance, and continued non-compliance may lead to further irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, limiting funds available to attend to service delivery needs. And the main root cause of the lack of compliance in the areas identified above is the fact that the department stays longer to implement the outcomes or the recommendations of the investigation in instances of irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. We also pick up repeat findings in the areas that we looked out for compliance. Last year they had issues on non-compliance, but we noticed an improvement in this particular area of compliance with legislation, therefore indicating a movement with a green arrow upwards. Next slide, Honorable Chair, is the procurement and the payments, where we're looking at the status of compliance with regards to procurement and contract management. And the key findings that relate to this particular aspect related to awards that were made to bidders who did not score the highest points. We also had instances where declarations not submitted for production and local content as required by the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act. Honorable Chair, the next slide is our analysis of the irregular expenditure over a period of 4 years. And when you look at 2018-19, 2019-2020, the irregular expenditure kept on increasing, and in the prior, it arose significantly and then reduced in the current year. And the reason for the 2020-21 increment in regular expenditure was in the previous years, 2018-2019, 2019-2020, was because we used to qualify the department on the completeness of irregular expenditure, in that the department was not able to fully account for the extent of irregular expenditure that they were incurring in the department. So in the 2020-2021, we realized that the irregular expenditure increased significantly when the department put in two measures to account for all the regular expenditure that was that the department had incurred and across all the implementing agents. So certain surge in the amount of irregular expenditure. And the irregular expenditure that has been incurred by the department is mainly due to non-compliance with supply chain prescripts. For the current year, the quantum of irregular expenditure was 1.5 billion, of which 0.6 billion related to expenditure on contracts that were already disclosed as irregular in the prior year. Chair, as indicated as well, although the amounts have declined the current year, it's still a concern, and in that the implementing agents are still struggling to implement and monitor controls over compliance with supply chain prescripts, and mainly they are struggled to award bids to the highest scoring bidders as required by the procurement, Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act. And bids were awarded to bidders who did not submit a declaration on local production and content in accordance with the National Treasury Note. Based on our assessment of irregular expenditure, we found that the procurement processes compromise one or more provisions of Section 217 of the Constitution relating to fairness, cost-effectiveness, transparency, and competitiveness. However, there was value for money on goods and services that were procured, and the impact, therefore, of, for example, of no declaration of local content or not considering the local content as required by the prescripts of the National Treasury Instruction Note, is that the small and medium and micro enterprise might be disadvantaged, and uplifting of local business to boost employment severely affected as a result of that. The next slide, Honorable Chair, is on the consequence management. Consequence management indicative of how the department was dealing with the regular expenditure that was incurred in the previous year. For the current year, for the previous years, all the irregular expenditure that was incurred in the 2020-21 year was investigated. That's the 6 billion that was there, 100% of it was investigated. And then 898 million was condoned. But on the same slide, Chair, Honorable Chair, we also highlighting the top contributors of the irregular expenditure for the department. And all these are implementing agents for the department, and the main one contributing the most being Mpula Trust with 680 million. We also have BBSA with 481, NEC with 209 million, IDC 48 million, and Randwater with 13 million. The department is yet to implement some of the outcomes of the investigations of irregular expenditure, and the department has also requested National Treasury to condone some of the irregular expenditure. Chair, Honorable Chair, I'll also move on to performance information on how the portfolio did with regards to predetermined objectives. And on this next slide, Honorable Chair, we'll look at the quality of performance reports before and after the audit, and we also look at the key findings that emanated from the audit of predetermined objectives for the entities that received findings on the predetermined objectives, as well as analysis of the achievement of targets. When we look at the quality of performance reports before and after, for Uma Lucy, when they submitted the performance report, it did not have findings. Therefore, it's got a color coding. Whereas for the DBE and SAIS, the annual performance report had material findings when we started auditing. For the DBE, they were able to make adjustments after during the audit, and after we've audited, they were able to make adjustments to those, therefore the color coding of no material findings being reported. But for SAIS, they were not able to do that. Therefore, SAIS could not reliably report on the achievement of targets, as the evidence provided differed from the reported achievement. And some of the indicators that we looked at were evidence provided could not support what they had reported in the annual performance report. That included number of educators supported on professional matters, percentage of professional development providers approved, percentage of professional development activities endorsed. And the reason for that is because management could not prepare a regular and accurate complete performance reports that are supported and evidenced by reliable information. We also picked up where indicators were misstated. And the impact of these of this particular negative audit outcome for SAIS is the impact on the service delivery due to the inadequate support and development of the educators that we'll have on the critical education areas. On the far right, Honorable Chair, is just our analysis in terms of achievement of the targets for the current year 2021-2022 to say that the DBE managed to achieve 82% of the target of the all the targets that they put in the annual performance report, and the achievement only was only 18%. For SAIS, the achievement was 64% and non-achievement 36%. And then Uma Lucy was able to achieve all the targets that they set out to achieve on. Honorable Chair, I will then move over to material irregularities that we looked at for the current year, or the material irregularities that the department that were reported on for the department. But before I go through the details thereof, just to refresh our understanding of material irregularities and the extended powers that the amendment to the Public Audit Act gave to the Auditor General with regards to material irregularities. And the amendment to the PAA gave us three issues in instances where the accounting officer is taking appropriate steps and is appropriately dealing with the material irregularities that have been reported to him. And the first one is it gave us powers to refer material irregularities to relevant public bodies for further investigation. Secondly, it also gave us powers to recommend actions to resolve material irregularities in the audit report or take binding remedial actions for failure to implement recommendations. Then sadly, in instances, it also gives the Auditor General power to issue certificate of debt for failure to implement remedial action if the financial loss was involved. And on the next slide, Honorable Chair, is our, once we've identified material irregularities in our audit process, then we're trying to highlight the next steps and the responsibilities of the different role players with regards to dealing with material irregularities that have been reported. Firstly, I'll touch on the responsibilities of the accounting officer, as well as the responsibilities of the Auditor General when we've reported on material irregularities. And I'll first deal with the first responsibilities or the next steps when it comes to dealing where the accounting officer is dealing with the material irregularities is where the accounting officer implements the committed actions to address the material irregularities and improves control to prevent recurrence thereof. Then the AG follows up in the next audit to determine whether the actions were implemented and outcomes were reasonable. If not, then we can conclude, we can include recommendations in the audit report on how the material irregularity should be addressed by a specific date. Then secondly, in instances where the material irregularity is referred to a public body, the accounting officer continues to cooperate with the public body and implements any remedial actions or recommendations made. The accounting officer also needs to improve the controls to prevent reoccurrence. Then from our side as the HSA, we need to provide information on the material irregularity to the public body, monitor progress with investigation, and follow up in audits on implementation of any remedial actions or recommendations. Then the third instance where recommendation is included in the audit report, the accounting officer or accounting authorities, they've got a responsibility to implement the recommendation by the date stipulated in the audit report and improve on the controls to prevent recurrence. Whilst as the AGSA, we need to follow up by a stipulated date to determine whether recommendations were implemented and audit outcomes were reasonable. If not, then we need to issue remedial action to the accounting officer or the accounting authority that must be implemented by a specific date. And then the last scenario, the last instance is where remedial action has been issued. In this instance, the accounting officer implements the remedial action by the date stipulated in the audit report and improves controls to prevent recurrence. Then the AGSA follows up to determine whether the remedial actions have been implemented. If not, issues a notice of intention to issue a certificate of debt to the accounting officer or accounting authority. And therefore, and also requests a written submission of reasons not to issue certificate of date within 20 days. So, Honorable Chair, those are the responsibilities of the accounting officer and the Auditor General when it comes to material irregularities that have been issued. But below, in the same slide, it's just the responsibilities of the executive and oversight. So firstly, in instances where the accounting officer is dealing with the material irregularity, the executive authority monitors progress and supports the accounting officer in addressing the material irregularity and improving controls. But for the oversight also, they continue to monitor progress and calls the accounting officer to account for actions taken and outcomes thereof. Then secondly, where the material irregularity is referred to a public body, the executive supports the public body supports the public body investigation and the accounting officer in improving the controls. If the executive is responsible for a public body, they also monitor progress with the investigation. And then for the oversight, they continue monitoring the progress with the investigations and call public body to account for the undue delays in investigations. In instances where recommendations have been included in the audit report, the executive monitors progress and supports the accounting officer in implementing recommendations and improve controls. The oversight requests action plan on implementation and monitors progress and calls the accounting officer to account for actions taken and outcomes thereof. Then lastly, in instances where remedial action has been issued, the executive monitors progress and supports the accounting officer in implementing remedial action and improving controls. Then the oversight monitors progress and calls the accounting officer to account for actions taken and outcomes thereof. So, Honorable Chair, this is just our reminder of the different roles and the next steps when it comes to the MI process and for the MIs that have already been issued or that are already in the system. Then I will move on to the MIs that we've issued to the department from last year to current year. In total, the four material irregularities that were issued last year and this year. So what we did in the current year is to follow up on the actions that have been taken by the accounting officer in addressing the material irregularities and trying to make sure that they resolve. And we reported accordingly in the audit report in terms of the status thereof as at 31st July. But we also followed up subsequent to the audit report date and also giving feedback in terms of what has been done up to date. The first material irregularity that I'll reflect on is the one that pertains to learner materials that were distributed to learners who did not qualify to be on the Karigudi program due to ineffective controls that were present at that particular point in time, and therefore leading to the department incurring a financial loss. In terms of the status as at 31st July, this particular material irregularity, the investigation into this particular matter had already been done in the previous year, in the 16-17 financial year. The accounting officer had already instituted disciplinary actions against the officials responsible for incurrence of these material irregularities. Some losses were also recovered in the 17-18 financial year, and the matter was subsequently referred to the South African Police Services in the 17-18 financial year to further investigate and recover the final or the remaining financial losses that had been incurred. At the time of the audit report at 1st July, the investigation was still ongoing. The investigating team had requested additional information from the department officials, which the department submitted on the 20th July. And subsequently, the audit report, the investigating officers also met with the DBE officials where they requested or asked for more information and asked for more questions regarding the material irregularities and requested the DBE to share some of the investigations that had already been conducted by the department. And this information was shared with the investigating officer on the 17th of August. As to date, this matter has not yet been finalized and it's still in progress and still with the hopes for further investigation. And the second material irregularity related to prepayment for goods not delivered. Here, the department advanced a prepayment of 78 million to an implementing agent for construction of schools. But however, the implementing agents could not provide supporting evidence to substantiate the amount of goods delivered that relates to the 78 million. The department in the previous year were able to recover 16 million from the implementing agent, and subsequently they were also able to withhold 15 million from the implementing agent because the implementing agent was not able to do a reconciliation of goods delivered versus the prepayment that was advanced. As at 31st July, the department was going to do a verification of the actual number of items that were installed by the implementing agent and also receive reconciliations of the final accounts of all the goods that were installed. During our follow-up subsequent to the audit, the verification of the actual numbers of items has been finalized, and the accounting office has obtained a revised reconciliation of the unreconciled amounts from the implementing agent on 31st of August, which showed a revised total difference of 24 million between the actual purchases and the prepayment. The accounting officer has since requested the implementing agent to refund the difference of the 8 million and the related accrued interest. The third material irregularity for the department was reported in the prior, and the accounting officer notified as well in 1st July 2021. This particular material irregularity pertains to interest paid on payments not paid made within 30 days. Interest was charged and the tune to the amount of 6.9 million was charged due to late payments. This particular matter as at 31st July, the investigation into the matter by the Departmental Investigation Committee had been concluded in May, and the committee concluded that an official who had contravened the provisions of Treasury regulations, the official had contravened Treasury regulations 8.2.3, and recommended that consequence management be instituted in line with the Treasury regulations. The accounting officer committed to that he will be implementing the recommendations of the investigation committee by the 31st of October 2020. During our follow-up, the accounting officer was in the process of addressing the MI and still indicated that this particular MI will be finalized by the 31st of October 2022. The last material irregularity, Honorable Chair, also relates to financial loss incurred due to payments not made within 30 days, therefore resulting in the withdrawal of the contractor from the site and claiming damages for the cancellation of the contract. And this particular material irregularity was also reported in the prior and followed up in the current year. It had three aspects to it. First, there was a loss pertaining to interest that was incurred for late payments. There was also loss related to claims from the contractor due to the cancellation of the contract. And then there also losses pertaining to material that had already been purchased and they were on site. In terms of our follow-up, as at the audit report date, an investigation into the matter by the investigation committee of the department had been concluded in May. And the committee concluded that the official who had contravened the provisions of Treasury Regulations 8.2.3 and recommended that consequence management be instituted in line with the Treasury Regulations. And here as well, the accounting officer undertook to ensure that the recommendations of the investigation committee would be implemented by the 31st of October. But the second aspect on this particular material irregularity is there was, when the department did the final account of the contractual value in terms of the claims by the contractor, it so happened that the contractor was now owing the department in terms of after doing the final reconciliation of the final account, and therefore the department had to go and claim back what the contractor owed to the department. But the contractor disputed the values in the final payment certificate and claimed that the department did not have a right to recover those payments, as those payments had already prescribed. So this necessitated the accounting officer to obtain a legal opinion on the matter and also committed at that particular date to recover the money due to the department and issuing summons by the 30th of September. During our follow-up, we were able to note that the legal opinion was obtained and it indicated that the claim of prescription by the contractor had no merit and the department should pursue the recovery of the amounts due. The department has already issued a letter of demand to the contractor, and which the contractor responded to, still maintaining that the amount had prescribed. So therefore, the accounting officer is proceeding with legal action to recover the funds. In terms of the disciplinary processes of the officials who caused the material crisis, this particular process has already commenced, and the affected officials have been notified. So the disciplinary processes are still in progress. Honorable Chair, on the next slide, just our observations and recommendations regarding the MI process at the department for the current year. And in terms of the observations from the MI process, we're indicating that to date, the department has managed to recover an amount of 16 million from the implementing agent on the prepayment of goods not delivered, and a further amount is to be recovered from the agent. The department has performed investigations on the material irregularities. However, disciplinary processes have not yet been finalized against all the officials implicated. And our recommendation to the portfolio committee is that the portfolio committee should regularly follow up on the implementation of appropriate actions to resolve the material irregularities, should also follow up on the status of the disciplinary actions against responsible officials and recovery of the losses that the department incurred. Honorable Chair, these are conclusions and recommendations in terms of the key root causes and what the entities need to do to improve on the audit outcomes. The key root causes that we picked up or that we observed is for the DPE and SAIS, they did not implement effective preventative controls over preparation of financial statements and annual performance report. They also, for DBE, that it did not put adequate controls to prevent non-compliance with procurement legislations. So as part of our recommendations, we indicating that all role players should continue to work together to strengthen the capacity, processes, and controls of entities in the portfolio, which will enable credible financial and performance reporting, compliance with key legislation, sound financial management, and improved service delivery. We're also urging the department to strengthen and improve on monitoring controls relating to compliance with legislation, as we picked up instances of non-compliance under key audit focus areas. And in some instances, these non-compliances resulted in two financial losses or likely financial losses for the department. Therefore, close monitoring of supply chain processes will serve as a deterrent for non-compliance while ensuring that all role players discharge their responsibilities. More effort is required to deal with irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure and instances of such possible expenditure for ensuring accountability. Consequence management should be instituted timely against all transgressors and recovery made of all losses incurred. Lastly, also indicating and recommending that institutionalizing financial disciplines at all entities is still critical. This will ensure credible financial and performance reporting that's supported by evidence. The department should strengthen daily, monthly controls to ensure credible financial reporting that's supported by reliable underlying supporting schedules. All these recommendations were shared with the department and will be incorporated in the remedial plan In addition, the department indicated that they will continue holding implementing agents and departmental officials accountable in ensuring quality school infrastructure delivery. Those are the audit outcomes for the DBE and the two entities within its portfolio. Now, Honorable Chair, I would like to present to you the audit outcomes for the sector as a whole. And here in the far slide, on the far left corner, just a comparison of the audit outcomes for 2021-22 versus the audit outcomes for 2020-21. The color codings are still the same, where we're saying green is indicative of unqualified with findings, and then yellow, green is indicative of unqualified with no findings, yellow, unqualified with findings, and purple, qualified with findings. The blue color is indicative of outstanding audits. So for the current year, in terms of our analysis, one department, by the time we prepare this presentation, the audit outcome of the Northwest was still outstanding, therefore indicating 11% out of the 9 provincial departments. And for majority of the auditees within the sector received unqualified with findings, and those are 6 departments, which include Gauteng, Northern Cape, Western Cape, Mpumalanga, Free State. Yes, those are the ones, the 6 of them that received unqualified with findings. And then 2 of the entities were qualified, and the main qualification area is due to the qualification was on 2 departments, the Department of the Provincial Education Department of Eastern Cape and Limpopo. And the qualification areas was on the accounting for infrastructure assets. And for Eastern Cape, mainly accounting for immovable assets, the information or the figures that were reported in the financial statements were not fully supported by reliable schedules. And similarly for Limpopo, the information that was accounted for commitments was also not fully supported by reliable supporting schedules, therefore resulting into the qualification. And then below the audit outcomes is just a depiction of our financial health, where we're looking at the different departments, where we're looking at how are they managing the money or the money that's budgeted for expenditure for service delivery. And for Free State and KZN, we're saying intervention is required. And then for DBE, Northern Cape, Eastern Cape, and Mpumalanga, we're saying that it's concerning. And mainly where we say it's concerning and intervention is required is most of these departments have exhausted the money that was budgeted for the current year's expenditure, and they, due to overspending, and due to budget constraints as well, therefore they're not able to meet most of the obligations in the current year, and therefore they would require extra money to settle the current year's expenditure with future periods budget. And most of these departments as well incurred unauthorized expenditure due to overspending on the budget. On the far right is just the audit outcomes for the audit of predetermined objective, which we commonly refer to as AOPO. And when you look at the 2 years, you see that the pie chart of over a number of unqualified has increased significantly for the current year. In the prior year, only Gauteng was received unqualified on predetermined objective, but now for the current year, half of the sector were not qualified. That's the Free State, Mpumalanga, and Northern Cape. So they improved significantly if you compare to the prior year. And below that, when we look at the quality of performance reports that were submitted prior to audit, to say that there was a regression in the sense that 22%, it was 22% which submitted quality performance reports compared to 30% in the prior, and then the quality of published financial reports submitted improved significantly, which is also in line with the improvement in the audit outcome on predetermined objectives, which is an increment from 20% in the prior to 56% in the current year. And then for the, in regards to usefulness of performance indicators and targets, there has been a regression here where some of the indicators that were indicated in the annual performance plans were not useful and compared to 100% in the prior. And the reason for this could be it's because of the two provinces that were qualified on this, which is the Western Cape and KwaZulu-Natal. Honorable Chair, the next graphic is just a depiction of our irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure over the 3 years in the sector. And with irregular expenditure is more or less the same as in the prior year, and 100% of this irregular expenditure was due to compliance with supply chain laws and regulations. And the biggest contributors for this irregular expenditure within the sector of that 3.2 billion is Limpopo with over a billion and Gauteng of 811 million. Then the fruitless and wasteful expenditure incurred for the department has reduced, which is 22% reduced from 107 million to 22 million for the current year. And the highest contributors here of this fruitless and wasteful is the Free State, Eastern Cape, and Mpumalanga. Chairperson, Honorable Chair, the next slide is just the material irregularities for the sector that we have in the sector as a whole. And for the current year, we have 10 material irregularities that were reported in the audit reports of the provincial departments. And we've classified them on this slide based on their nature. And the first one relates to interest and penalties, material irregularities due to interest that was paid on late payments or payments not made within 30 days. And here, the biggest contributor being there were six material irregularities here, but the biggest contributor with this was the Eastern Cape with four, Free State with one, and KZN with one. Then when you come to the nature of procurement and payment, where one, the Gauteng one had one material irregularity pertaining to procurement of decontamination and fogging and deep cleaning of facilities at excessive prices, which would result into a likely financial loss. And then Eastern Cape as well had two material irregularities for payment of goods not received or delivered. And then lastly, the last material irregularity related to KZN, where salary payments were paid to persons no longer employed by the department and contravening the Treasury Regulation 8.1.0. And then in terms of the status thereof, of all the 10 material irregularities, we've looked at them and we are happy that the accounting officers are taking appropriate steps to resolve the material irregularities. And one of the material irregularities for the Free State had been resolved. Honorable Chair, the last slide I'm presenting is the one that pertains to the work that we did in terms of the KwaZulu-Natal flood relief interventions that was done there in April. And here, Honorable Chair, we looked at the 356 schools that the special interventions that were damaged in the KZN and repairs are not yet started. But our main focus specifically for the education sector, we looked at the mobile units that were being planned as interim relief. The department had reported that they had completed 53 installation of 53 mobile units. And from our selection criteria, we selected 15 mobile classrooms, one costing 249,000 and one mobile kitchen costing 187,000 at five schools. And some of the key observations that we picked up was that there was lack of coordination in the department, resulting in inadequate needs assessment. For example, where only 13 mobile classrooms were allocated for 880 learners. We also picked up procurement weaknesses where pre-qualification criteria used were not in line with preferential procurement regulations, and suppliers were appointed to a panel that did not meet the pre-qualification criteria. There was also instances where incomplete installation of mobile units. Of the 53 units that had been reported as complete, none of them had been, 16 of the units that we looked at had been completed during our site visits, and handing over had not taken place. We also observed that deliverables were not according to specifications, where various quality defects, including poor positioning, instability, poor support, electrical non-compliance, and inadequate weatherproofing were identified. We observed that equipment and learning materials were not delivered. And in terms of the impact, mobile units not in use, learners are using crowded and structurally unsafe classrooms, risking injury. And the key root cause, Honorable Chair, is a lack of coordination in the department due to poor monitoring and oversight of installation and the quality of units and suitability of land. And our recommendations or actions to call is the infrastructure stability issues to be addressed immediately, reporting output to be defined and staff to be properly trained, and all the 76 planned units to be inspected for compliance and quality, and all remedial work to be fast-tracked before payments are made. Honorable Chair, I will now hand over to Dr. Rambau to take us through the value add work that we did in this education sector. Thanks.
May you please go ahead? Thank you. You're mute, Dr. Rambau. Chair, I'm just trying to... Dr. Rambau? Joshua, go ahead with the slide while we locate Dr. Go ahead, please. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. As comes back in terms of the sound technicalities, and one of the work that we looked at was the school nutrition program, where we looked at the implementations and implementation of this particular program. And this particular program, Honorable Chair, is funded through a conditional grant of 800 billion, of which the entire 8 billion was spent. And we conducted this audit across all the 9 provinces, across 18 education districts and 180 schools. One of the key observations is that we picked up was that schools did not manage the school nutrition program effectively in all provinces except Gauteng, where we noted that some schools did not have a functional national schools nutrition program committees, and coordinators in some of the school committees were not aware of their roles and responsibility. The other observation that we picked up as a result of this was the delivery and management of the NFP stock was not done effectively. Therefore, some schools were not delivered. In some schools, food items were not delivered timely or not delivered at all, resulting in schools experiencing shortages, and therefore affected the provisioning of the healthy and the right meal portions for the learners. We also, in the same We also identified that there were not regular stock reconciliations of the stock register and the records of stock that was at hand, therefore could not determine how much stock was at hand at a particular point in time. But most importantly, Honorable Chair, is in some instances we found that the funds were not used for purposes related to the meal program. Case in point was in Northwest, where 8 schools that we looked at out of the 20 that we visited, the funds were extensively used for purposes other than for meals. For example, there was funds used for construction of pavements, carports, and buying products that were not related to the program. In the Northern Cape, we also had, we picked up that schools had not served food to learners since February 2022 because the funds were used for disaster management. Other observation that we picked up, that schools did not adhere to hygiene and safety regulations. Food handlers did not use the prescribed personal protective equipment, or meals were not prepared in conducive environments. And lastly, the monitoring and support and reporting was not done consistently across the schools that we visited. And therefore, it's one of the items that we recommend to be improved upon. And Honorable Chair, the impact of this PACHAWA program, the school nutrition program, is it's aimed, the program improves the livelihood of learners from poor socioeconomic backgrounds. However, in some instances, learners were served meals in not healthy environment and they were prone to contamination and food poisoning, which could negatively affect the learning capacity of these learners. And the main cause that we're highlighting is that some schools did not charge these roles and responsibilities, and proper guidance was not given, and monitoring not done adequately, while reporting was not done consistently across the board. And therefore, we're recommending to the accounting officer to provide directives for schools to align the National Schools Nutrition Program planning, monitoring, and reporting to the annual management processes to compel schools to include the NSP program when they do school self-evaluation. Include the NSNP actions in the school improvement plan and report quarterly and annually on the progress made in improving the NSP implementation. Honorable Chair, I'll also move over to the next initiative that we looked at in terms of our value add work within the sector. And this one pertains to the phase two of the Basic Education Employment Initiative, which has the primary objective of creating fixed-term job opportunities for unemployed youth in the 18 to the 35-year age cohort. And the phase two aimed to appoint 280,000 assistants at a cost of 6 billion over 5 months. And then our audit focus was to ensure whether the objective was achieved and whether the initiative was efficiently and effectively implemented. Similar to the nutrition program, this audit was conducted at the national department and the 9 provincial education departments, as well as 18 education districts and 180 public schools. The key observations that we picked up in terms of implementation of the Basic Education Employment Initiative was on regarding recruitment and the appointment processes, where assistants who did not meet the appointment criteria in terms of qualifications and age, or youth without criminal records, or youth not receiving other incomes or stipends and grants. So like I indicated, this particular program was aimed for 18 to 35 year olds, but we noted in most of the instances, in some instances, that it accommodated people who were not eligible for this, who were over the 35 year age gap. And we also noted that contracts and job descriptions for assistants did not conform to the project framework. Replacements were not appointed upon contract terminations. Some of the appointed assistants did not acquire formal training as it was required by the framework. Instances of double dipping, especially with the SRD grant, were prevalent in all the 9 provinces, resulting in an average of 53,000 assistants also receiving SRD grants per month, with a total SRD grant payments of 150 million over the 5 million over the 5 month period to the appointed assistants. The other key aspect or decisions that we picked up in terms of the program was regarding the attendance, leave administration, and payment of stipends. We noted that there was inadequate management and monitoring of assistants because daily attendance was not adequately recorded. This, together with the late issuance of guidance on pro-rata payments by the DBE in December, resulted in absenteeism exceeding the entitled leave as per the framework without pro-rata payments being implemented. Pro-rata payments were also not implemented where appointments and terminations took place during the month. And lastly, incorrect calculations of UIF resulting in overpayments of assistance and under deduction of UIF contribution to be paid. And in terms of our impact assessment, the full use was not made of the opportunity to improve the youth future employability as intended, among other objectives. And the main cause for this was short-term nature and limited capacity in the PDs resulted in the initiatives being implemented under constraints and competing priorities. Training was hampered by delayed procurement of training services, non-availability of transport and accommodations, and network issues. Progress was not adequately monitored and reported to enable timely corrective actions. And Honorable Chair, we are recommending that dedicated staff should be made available by the education departments and schools to efficiently and effectively implement short-term projects such as the Basic Education Employment Initiative, including recruitment, appointment, management, as well as monitoring and reporting. And lastly, intergovernmental processes should be improved to ensure double dipping does not take place. Chair, I'll stop here and allow the speech to take us through the infrastructure.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'll take you through the infrastructure. On the next slide, Joshua, the focus areas for infrastructure for this year was on the education infrastructure grant, as well as the schools backlog grant, focusing on a CD. Our scope involved 27 projects, which was 3 in each province, and 3 projects for a CD, with a contract value, a total contract value of 1.75 billion. We did a follow-up of 24 projects. On the next slide, Joshua. The infrastructure project lifecycle is what we had audited as part of the infrastructure review. This involves looking at planning, project implementation, project management, as well as commissioning. Under planning, we would look at how the needs assessments and planning processes were done, whether there were feasibility studies done, whether there was budgeting and designs also in place. For the project implementation, we usually look at the professional services that was contracted in with regards to also looking at the monitoring and supervision on the project. On project management, our focus is mainly on time, cost, and quality of the deliverables of the infrastructure project. And on commissioning, where applicable, we had looked at whether the facilities had been completed and used for its intended purpose, and there was actually optimal utilization or not. The overview across the sector, with the exclusion of Northwest Education, as they had not yet signed off as of the 1st of September, many of the provinces had findings around project implementation as well as project management involving time, cost, and quality. The only province that had no issues was on the Western Cape. Joshua, on the next slide. With the high-level findings that we have, the deficiencies that we've identified was on the areas of inadequate project planning, and that leads to areas where if there is inadequate project planning, usually it results in compensation events or actually variation orders which then impacts on the timeliness and effectiveness of the delivery of finished facilities. If you look at also the deficiencies around ineffective project implementation, which includes the monitoring and supervision, as well as the lack of consequence management to rectify problems and to encourage accountability from both client and contractor, we found that that leads to areas of where if there were stumbling blocks or issues that may arise, it doesn't get dealt with in a very timely manner during the execution of the infrastructure project. We had also identified deficiencies of the ineffective project management, and that was ultimately resulted in progress that remained slow, and ultimately there were delays on the project delivery, and usually that results in increased project costs and in some instances financial losses. We also had poor workmanship and quality issues in some facilities. On the lack of intergovernmental relationships, this was in particular to some of the CD schools, the actual impact was that the schools were not fully utilized. We did do the follow-up of certain projects, and what we found was that it was reassuring in some instances that the counting officers had actually taken into account our previous year's recommendations. But there were some accounting officers that did not follow through on some of the recommendations from the previous years. And as a result, we had a repeat of some of the findings that is coming through. Joshua, I will just go through very quickly on some of the examples that we had. On the issue of inadequate planning, an example was the law school Fikimeya in Gauteng, where this was a facility or a school where there was to be refurbished, and that had been delayed due to results of poor planning. When our teams went on site to do the actual site visit, what we found was that the contractor was awaiting many instructions to be approved for them to continue with the project. And as a result of the delay, that also impacted on where the kids were in the rented mobile classrooms, and they had to then extend that contract for the renting of those mobile classrooms. We do have some pictures there that is coming through from our site visits. On the next slide, we have an example of Batlaro Tlapeng Secondary School in the Northern Cape, where we found here that this school was to build new hostels and facilities to address the issues of learning of the learners having to travel long distances from their homes to get to school. And what we found was when our teams went on site was the school had been practically completed, which means that it is fit for use, but they hadn't been installed to the electrical installations. And as a result, we couldn't actually verify the expenditure of 2.4 million on the project. In the example of Dinizulu Secondary School, here we had a school that had been delayed by approximately 3 years. And as a result of the delays, there was also impact to cost. And we also had identified issues around poor workmanship, and that is stemming from the project management issues that was experienced on the project. On the lack of intergovernmental relationships, this was in particular to the Kidston Junior Primary School in the Eastern Cape. And, you know, these schools are really very, very beautiful. They absolutely, you know, provide the actual facilities for kids in those areas. And when our teams went out on site, we found that although the school had been completed, it was catering for about 974 pupils, and it was approximately 50% being actually occupied. And hence, it hasn't been utilized to its full capacity due to resource constraints that was being experienced at the school. In the next slide, these are just some pictures of some of the examples where we have portrayed some of the poor quality work that was identified. Where we see that there are certain specifications like the walkway there that hadn't been installed appropriately, you know, the retaining walls are not being appropriately installed, as well as the stormwater drainage had issues around there. And some of the installations were not even conducive to kids actually using some of the facilities at the school. In the next slide, we did follow up of some of the projects, and there's two examples that we'd like to highlight. The one is the Jubilee Park Primary School in the Eastern Cape. Here, there were a poor planning that was experienced, and that was as a result by the implementing agent as well as the professional team. As a result of that, there was cost increases on the project, and as also there were delays due to late payment by the department. There were also a lot of variation orders on this project, and that amounted to about 13 million rand of irregular expenditure, because some of the variation orders was above the 20% threshold. For the Maliboko Primary School in the Free State, here we had experience where there was partial practical completion, and this project took approximately 5 years to be completed. During our site visit, we noticed that some of the deliverables had not been completed, like, for example, the hall in the school. And this project also experienced cost overruns, where it had escalated to about 54% of the original project value. On the next slide, I'd just like to highlight some of the recommendations that we had proposed to the departments on the areas of improving of planning processes as well as project management and implementation. I'd also like to highlight that in 2021, we had compiled an infrastructure preventative control guide that is available for all accounting officers to actually get sight of. And this comes through from our experience throughout this, the sector over the years that may provide some assistance to the accounting officers. We did record some of the commitments that was received from the departments. And it is encouraging to note that some of them have said that they will take on an action plan and be more committed to monitoring and managing of the projects. So we hope to see a change in the sector in the next year or so. Joshua, thank you. Over to you.
Thanks, Bukesh, and thanks, Honorable Chair. The next slide is just our recommendations to the sector in terms of improving the audit outcomes going forward. And then the next slide is, as well, is some of the recommendations that we're requesting or asking the audit committee to take up in terms of following up with accounting authority and in improving the audit outcomes and the deliverables as required by those departments. I will now hand over to the BE to close our presentation. Thanks.
Thank you, Charles. Thank you, Bukesh. Honorable Chair, that will be our summary, but I think a key to note is the work that still needs to happen with regard to infrastructure. You remember that if you take DPE as an example, it's been quite a journey. I mean, for a number of years, 18, 19, 19, 20, is when they've still struggled with just getting the records appropriate, you know, just making sure that you record the stage of completion properly, you accumulate your expenditure properly, and hence we were qualifying them on infrastructure in terms of the financial management. So they had moved past that. And then we were confronted with a regular expenditure where it was really coming up in different spaces. And in the main, you would see that the regular expenditure was coming up in instances where they had to utilize implementing agents. So the process that the implementing agents are using in really getting service providers on the ground were not necessarily in line with the precept. And
fast forward to today, you see a situation where DPE can at least reliably report on all their irregular expenditure. The biggest journey that's facing them would be now to hold people accountable to what would have happened throughout the years as these prescriptions are not followed. And in addition to that, it's really just to tighten the preventative controls just to make sure that as a department, they are not exposed to some of the officials following their own processes as opposed to that which the Treasury regulations and the PFMA dictate. And that will be the journey for the DBE. But if you look at the sector, many of the departments across the country still struggle in just managing the implementing agents. And you would like to see them taking some of the lessons that DBE has went through just to try and replicate in making sure that the sector closed out completely on the management of infrastructure. As this is indicated, we've issued a guide as the office just to try and assist our auditees in the sector in what to look out for as you run the infrastructure processes. The process of MIs, yes, we've issued the material irregularities in line with the amended PAA. But what we'd love to see is a situation where these MIs do not occur to begin with, because sometimes it becomes too late that we must recover and invest energy in trying to get money back that could have been avoided. I guess what we are hoping to see as the AGSA in the future is that as a sector, we make it difficult for us to lose the fiscus as and when we run our finances. Obviously, the reliance on the audit process to pick up the errors across the sector is still there. There, our encouragement is for the finance units to really tighten the daily and monthly processes, because it becomes difficult when you wait to get an audit finding and then rectify it. I mean, in one unfortunate year, that the errors are so many, it may be very difficult for some of these departments to really survive, hence they end up with qualifications. But I think where we are sitting as a sector, we should be geared to really drive some of these things in the right direction if we remain committed, if we are on the ground on time. The nutrition program for us, we still see it as a very valuable program. Our view is that we really just need to make sure that we unblock some of these things that are not happening the way that we intended to do, like what we've seen in the Northwest, where they use this money for something other than providing nutrition to the kids. It just makes it difficult then as a sector for us to ensure that we move in the same direction. The employment initiative added value. People got employment in a short period of time, but obviously we need to then just reflect on how did we want it to run. Initially, you would have wanted to benefit the youth, and you will see that in the main, you end up benefiting the elderly. That's why you get confronted with situation where people are on this program and they're getting the grants at the same time. So there, I think there's an opportunity for the sector to just pause and reflect in terms of how we want to move on some of this initiative. Who do we want to benefit and be more intentional in driving the things that we are driving? I'll pause here, Chair, just to appreciate some of the comments from the honorable members. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Boy and the team, for this presentation. Let me note hands from the honorable members that would want to engage the AG report. Or are we fine with the presentation from the Auditor General as is? Seeing the hand of Honorable Lucia, you can proceed.
Good morning, Chair. Are you noting others, okay, or can I? Okay.
What is happening? Why do you sound very far?
Others.
Hmm.
I don't know. My device is still the same, and I don't know. It's only my voice that has.
Yeah, you are fine now. You're fine. You can proceed.
All right. No, thank you very much, Chairperson, good morning to yourself and good morning to the department, honorable members. Good morning to the AG and our entities who are here today, Chair. I would request not to open my video because my network has not been good. Let's appreciate the presentation from the Auditor General of South Africa. Very comprehensive report looked at all possible audit issues they could look at, and we really appreciate that. From their presentation, they also went and did some to look at some of these projects that would have been happening throughout the financial year. We really appreciate that. Chair, concerning for me is that on a regular expenditure, there are provinces that did not improve. You know, there are, you know, I don't know whether they had audit plans to address issues raised in the previous financial year or what happened, because they did not improve. They still had high numbers of irregular expenditure. I don't know what to do, Chair. I'm not sure, Chair, if you remember. I think in 2020, in Parliament, Chair, we had a discussion and we said there must be certain acts that must be augmented to give Auditor General teeth to bite, because we were concerned, Chair, that Auditor General makes findings against departments, against entities, year in and year out, and there's nothing that happens. And we're supposed to, I'm not sure if that was done, to, you know, strengthen those acts so that when Auditor General finds repeat offenders, they are able to bite. Because it looks as if Auditor General will do this until 2060, until, you know, 2099, find issues against entities, against departments, against, you know, the national department, year in and year out, on a regular expenditure, wasteful expenditure, on material irregularities on annual financial statements and all of that. And there's nothing that happens. The department or the entity will go back and say, no, there's consequence management on person A. And they'll just put a date there that the expected date of finalization of this consequence management will be after Auditor General has reported to us. And there's nothing that happens really of significance, because the following year, the same things are happening again. So I don't know, Chair. Well, I appreciate the work of the AG, and this is not against them, but I don't know if this process is really assisting in getting us, you know, to do the right thing, or our colleagues there in departments and entities to do the right thing in preservation of public funds, proper usage of public funds, or it's just a tick box exercise. So I'm honestly, Chair, I don't know. That was just a statement I wanted to make before going into my questions, that there must be something. We must find really a way of making our departments, our provincial departments and entities to properly account and to do certain things right there, you know. I mean, in the Northwest, they're saying the department was using money meant to give poor students food at schools for something to put paving. Yeah? And all that's what, almost 800 million, if I heard correct, of money that was meant for something. And it went to do something else. I mean, how are we going to replace that money to get those learners food if we are not going to rob them? Because clearly, if you use money that was not supposed to use on this project, it means that project does not have that money. So how are you going to replace it? So some of these kids who honestly come from impoverished families, they kind of have breakfast at home, they get to school and you expect them to pass, but you have not given them breakfast as you are supposed to have done. And I don't know what has happened, if there's been any consequence management on those people who did that, who, on those people who authorized those things, who, you know, very bad. I think at the right time, we must have a proper engagement with the Northwest Provincial Department to clarify some of these things, not only them and others as well. Chair, to my questions to the AG, when they were doing this audit in the department, over the years and in other committees where I serve, Chair, I know that there will be situations where the entity does not agree with what the AG would have recommended based on what they say. Maybe the AG did not follow you know, 1, 2, and 3 things properly, or the AG refused them to do the corrections, you know, all of those things. So I want to ask the AG, in this sector of basic education, have you encountered any of those things where an entity, provincial department or national department are saying to no AG, we don't agree with you on this one. Let's agree to disagree because we think this should have been done this way. Have you encountered any of those in the sector? And if so, which entities, provincial departments, national department, which entities, who? Where did you encounter that and how did you resolve? Did you encounter any challenges with certain information that you require or request from the auditees where they are not submitting the information? For an example, maybe you are auditing performance. And the department says, no, here we believe we have performed at 80%. But when you look at, when you request that data, have you encountered any challenges as far as that is concerned? So I think most of the questions that come from the presentation of the AG will be best suited to be answered by the department and the entities, and maybe if possible later on, if we can find time, maybe some of these provincial departments. So some of my direct questions, Chairperson, I will direct them to the affected parties. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning.
Thank you very much, Honorable Notada.
Thank you so much, Chair. Chair, can I just check if I'm audible before I start?
Yes. Yeah.
All right, cool. Thank you so much for the presentation, AGSA. It's truly appreciated. And I think, Chair, this has confirmed a lot of what I've been raising in the past 2 years at pains, particularly around implementing agents. And, you know, at times it's viewed in whatever way it is viewed. But the reality of the situation is that it has come out very strongly in the presentation by the Auditor General. And its potential and already currently impact on the service delivery component of education. And it's quite worrying that, you know, largely the irregular expenditure that comes from the department is placed at the doorstep of the implementing agents. And it is quite interesting that the AGSA continues to further raise other issues, such as the usefulness of some targets, you know, the audit recommendations not being implemented, and basically some of the challenges that we pick up on the entities that are there and the provinces. Now, Honorable Lazier covers it very well when he says at the end of his, you know, interaction, is that majority of these questions, in fact, 99% of them, must be placed at the doorstep of the department. But also, beyond this, the questions, I think the recommendations that we make as a committee based on these audit findings become very, very critical, because we are an oversight body that is supposed to ensure that whatever is implemented in the executive has a significant impact on the lives of the people that elected us to serve on these committees in Parliament. Now, my questions are just twofold to the AG, and I hope maybe if the answers, you know, can't be provided immediately, you know, they can be later sent to us. The first one is around the implementing agents. And the question is this, there's a slide where you have done the oversight to some of these schools to physically see things for yourself, which is something I strongly believe in. And part of the example that you cite here, I think, is Jubilee Park Primary School. You go into detail about, you know, the deviation of the allowed percentage of 20% to, you know, to deviate in the project, you know, resulting in that project being over 13 million on irregular expenditure. The question I have is that of the schools that you've have done audits on, I think the number was mentioned during the presentation, I'm just not sure of the exact number now. How many of them have you picked up that the project itself, in terms of what it was budgeted for, has exceeded that 20% room of being adjusted to ensure that it is completed? And if the question is not clear, the background is this on my end, that there is money set aside either through a CD or various other infrastructure programs that the department has, that this school we're going to build for X amount of money. Because of maybe the challenges of implementing agents or the irregularities or the delays thereof, whatever the causes of that are from the implementing agent side, the project cost ends up being an amount that is bigger than what was originally budgeted for. And in some instances, even exceed what is required for them to adjust their budget. So with the schools that you looked at on the ACD program, or with the implementing agents in particular, how many of them have actually exceeded or exceeded the amount of money that was originally budgeted for? That's the first question. And how many of them actually have exceeded the adjustments that is available to them? And the reason I ask this question is because I've asked this question to DBE before, and you know, there was no forthcoming response. But you have a specific group of schools that you have now audited and engaged. So of those, I want to see whether there is no inflation or inflating of the cost of building those schools. Because at the end of the day, what that does is that the money that is required to alleviate the backlog, to eradicate, you know, the backlog that is available or maintain existing infrastructure, or even build more infrastructure that is needed for the schools, you know, shrinks, because then money is put on projects that we end up overspending, and ultimately they become irregular expenditure because of people that are either incompetent or whatever reasons are with implementing agents, which repeat the same things over and over again with no consequences put in place. They're not blacklisted in any way. They're not held accountable to the standard that they need to hold accountable. But we're told that, no, there's better interaction, you know, there's better interaction with the implementing agent. So the question I ask is very, very specific. And if that is not readily available, if the AGSA can provide that information to us so that we can make informed comments and decisions as members of this committee. The second thing you've indicated is that in terms of, you've identified that there's some targets, you've identified, you know, the usefulness of these targets. What are exactly the usefulness of these specific targets? Would you be able to provide us with some of the identified targets that you've looked at in the service delivery mechanism of the department on the budget review recommendation report that is available, that you say, you know, these targets, you know, we question the usefulness of them, because what we've also raised in the past is that we put targets there for box ticking exercise, that we must visit 9 schools to see if they have got a fence. We must visit 3 schools to see if there's a teacher standing in front of it. I mean, whatever the targets are, you know, I'm just now making examples that don't exist in the thing, but just trying to illustrate my point that there is sometimes a challenge with the usefulness of the targets that are set by the department. And therefore, do you have a list as AGSA of the targets that you've identified that are questionable in terms of the usefulness? And my questions are simply those two to you. And the one question I forgot around the implementing agents in particular is whether with the implementing agents that you've listed, because you've listed some implementing agents in the audit report of, you know, who are the offenders, you know, Rand Water, you know, DBSA, you know, there's quite a few implementing agents that are there. And then I looked at the AGSA report, the full, not the presentation, the report that you have sent to us. I think it's about 45 pages, if I'm not mistaken. It does not necessarily indicate as to those offenses, the amounts that are listed there on the outcome, where do they come from? And if I maybe miss that, if that can be shared maybe with us as well, so we can take an informed decision. But generally, Chair, I think majority of my questions, like I said, 99.9% of my questions are for the Department of Education, space, Umalusi and the provinces. And I think we should be able to engage with all of them before, you know, even finalizing what our recommendations would be to the House in relation to the report that will be presented to us at the later stage. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Honorable Edwards? Honorable Edwards?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to yourself. Good morning to the honorable members, the office of the AG led by Ms. Gombambe and the team, to the team DBE. Chair, let me also join members in appreciating the report, the audit report of the departments, the agency, its agencies, and also the provinces. It is very informative, and I think it will also serve as a guide when we do our own oversight work as the portfolio committee. And Chair, let me also take this opportunity and pose some of the questions, as I also agree with the honourable members that spoke before me, that most of the questions, to be correct, are actually to be posed with the department, that will do that at the right time. But also on the report that you received, there are several concerns that the AG has raised, of which I think also they pose as a concern when it comes to the quality of education and also in delivering services to our people. Chair, the first concern, I think, it is with regard to the Northwest Province, as the AG has alluded to in their presentation, that firstly, they did not submit in time. Maybe if they could share with us what were the challenges of them not submitting in time. And also, what will be the implications thereof of not submitting in time? Because as the presentation, you know, went on, you'd realize that there are so many challenges that are being, you know, observed in the Northwest, that money was not spent where it was supposed to be spent and all those things. So if maybe they could share with us if they have any idea why did not submit in time, and what will be the implications thereof. The second concern is with regard with the assistance teachers or staff that were employed for the number of the months in schools, and there were certain challenges that were encountered both by schools, the department, and so forth. And if maybe we could also we actually see that there is a new advert that is out, but I think also this question will pose with the department, you know, if there are any, you know, systems in place to make sure that the same challenges, they are not going to reoccur. But from the Office of the AG, we'll also want to hear what would be their advice and recommendation to such a concern that they have raised, how to remedy this challenge before the new intake in 2023. And secondly, Chair, it is with regard to, you know, the lessons learned on the COVID-19. That we went through as the country and the world, what is it that the AG actually saw that must be done differently? Because now it seems as if we went back to doing things in a normal way that were done before COVID. Because during COVID, there were preliminary audits that were done. We saw very, you know, active actions that were taken. Many people were arrested on the spot and all those things. And now we get a report that there are still disciplinary processes that have not unfolded for the under review. So I would want to hear from the Office of the AG, you know, what is different, what has made them to, you know, achieve so much, or the country even at large to achieve so much in making sure that there is law and order and processes and compliance were done, and they played a very important role in making sure that that happened, and vis-a-vis the audit that they are doing now. And when it comes to infrastructure, Chair, I think they've also indicated that the implementing agents are still, you know, the challenge, even though we see that there's a movement on the side of the department where they are trying to recoup money, and there's money that has been, recouped from some of the implementing agents. But, you know, within this process of, you know, the infrastructure challenges that the department have encountered for the past 2 or 3 years that we've been doing this work, what, you know, would be, you know, the remedial action that the AG would advise the department to do, because we still face the department still faced with the same, you know, challenge. It might come in a different fold, but it is the same challenge of the infrastructure, and we don't hear whether there is any consequence management that was done on the side of, you know, of the department, whether the project managers were held accountable or what consequence management has been, you know, put in place in making sure that there is some kind of accountability in all sides. And Chair, maybe two last questions on my side will be, what systems can be developed to ensure timely responses in disasters, and shouldn't be an alternative procurement processes and project management be considered as this impacts, you know, in our communities? And also on the AGSA, what is the extent of enforcement of conditions in the contract, noting that many provinces have findings, time, cost, and building. quality which reflects. Poor project management and poor contract management. And how does the AG ascertain quality of expenditure in when they are busy doing their work? So, Chair, those will be my question. I will pause there for now. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Muratetla?
Bolidas Tudulo, Maloko, Kamoka, at this all important portfolio committee. Really, good morning. For starters, let us say we welcome and appreciate the presentations as brought forward to this portfolio committee. I've got one or two, three questions, Chairperson, and thank you for the opportunity. Straight to the AG, the Auditor General report. Let me establish and try to find out here, Chair, as to which performance information appears not to be complying with their SMART as reported. And number two, on the FFC, how does the FFC ascertain the quality of expenditure as contained in this report? And number three, which are the specific program or programs, the specific programs that the FFC identify as not equitably supported? Because failure to identify, it would mean it is going to create a problem in as far as trying to beef it up is concerned. Maybe the last question, Chair, which becomes more problematic. The COVID era and the Ukraine invasion, the two have affected almost each and every aspect of our lives. Now my question is, noting the budget allocation to the department and the growth of grant expenditure that is always on the decline. That's what I say, we are all and equally affected by these two absurd incidents. You see, every time when the report came, we were told that there are budget cuts. So everything appears to be on the decline, especially if you are just going to look at one side. Now, my question is, how can the department attract financial support outside the fiscals to support its policy objective? I'm talking about makeshift arrangements here, realizing that we are forever faced with the budget cuts. How best can we, or the department, or what is the advice to the department to go out and outsource, if it be possible, for the department to be able to support its policy objectives? Maybe I can just stop there for a while, Chairperson, and thank you.
No, thank you very much, Principal. Actually, we're supposed to be ending now this meeting and start with the FFC. So what one is trying to raise is that we that's behind our schedule. I think members have raised the concerns and some of the issues that we would have wanted to raise. But can you, when you respond, also just try to tell us the AOPO, Gabo and the team, what does it stand for? I get it now. We are people of Amandla, so these are abbreviations. Especially when they are accounting, like, they confuse us more. The second issue that I want to raise, and I want you to reflect very honest with us, is the audit outcome of SAIS, which is the entity of the department. I want you to tell us, in your own view, I know you did tell us that management is not providing a reliable reporting. And my issue is, in your own view, do you think that SAIS is taking your recommendations seriously, or rather, are they implementing them? And I'm raising this because I think since we became an oversight body from Parliament that deals with DBE, Omalusi is and has always got a clean audit. Probably it is because of they've been having a veteran CEO that runs the entity to an extent that they have been able to maintain their audit outcome. But I am making a comparison because I think them as well as the entities of the department, they should be able at some point to have a sense of competing when it comes to the audit outcomes. But I'm asking it because I don't think it is coming for the first time, the issue of management from state. In particular. So I would really want you as the Auditor General to reflect on that. And then there is a slide, I think it's slide 12, where you are saying, where you speak of KZN Limpopo and Eastern Cape. My question is, what are your findings on this problem, please? Why are perennial issues on the irregular expenditure on these three specific provinces, your KZN, Limpopo, and Eastern Cape. And there is a slide where you are saying that when you visited provinces, you visited KZN and there have been 356 schools that were damaged, and repairs were not done. My question, therefore, is, are those schools that you visited, was it because of the flood disasters? And I'm raising this because I happened to serve as well in the flood committee, which is established in Parliament, which is going anyway to give the report to Parliament, I think, in November. But what I see is the difference, in reporting on the pricing, in on page 29, the costing of the mobile classroom is 187,130, and I think the report that is going to be tabled in Parliament, the same mobile classroom are costing between 68,000 to 75,000. And I know you are an oversight board just like ourselves, but those are the issues that we get to find, and they create confusion because they are as a contradiction. When you are at least able to sit in two committees that deal with the same issue, and then the prices change and they change so drastically. My last issue is, there's a slide where you are saying that there is a 15 billion irregular expenditure, but you are not telling us what is the name of the company that was awarded the contract. I think those are my observations, and I wouldn't want to sing a chorus that says other questions would have been better when we deal with the department, which we are going to get that opportunity to deal with the department. I have forgotten, or rather not so were the hand of Honorable Sukers, which I am going to give now over to raise her questions. And then after that, I'm going to hand over to you, Kabo, and the team to give us responses. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm just here in the middle of the Karoo. I don't know if I'm very audible.
We can hear you.
100%. Thank you, Chair. Let me also just say thank you to the department for the AG for their presentation. I don't have a lot of questions. I only have three. The one is that I want to just ask if anyone is looking at the issue of grade inflation within the Department of Basic Education, with officials moving up in grades and the attendant increase in cost, and the organization as a result of that becoming top heavy. This is an issue that obviously I have picked up from another oversight, and I'm asking the question as it relates now to the sector. Then the second question, Chair, is about how performance is being reported, and I'm asking the AG. The reports are often input rather than output driven. For instance, rather than the impact of the investment, because South African taxpayer makes a significant amount of money, a significant investment rather, into our education. Are we assessing the performance of this department particularly in regard to the impact of that investment? In any business, when you put a certain amount of money in, there is an expectation from those who have invested in it that the impact or the performance of the company rather is based on the performance or the yield, the intended yield from what it is that you have invested in. So I'm just asking whether the impact is discussed with the department. In for instance, I'll make an example. If you're doing comprehensive sexuality education and you link it to the impact of teen pregnancies, there's a significant amount of money that has gone into the curriculum and this program, and the impact of that, is that a discussion that is had with the department? Because I think Honorable Adwins has raised a very important question. She said, have we learned any lessons from COVID-19? And as a result of that, do things differently? So my question, and I'm speaking as somebody that comes obviously from a total different background, that is there a difference in, are we going into a difference of reporting where we can see what is the impact of programs? We can clearly see with the infrastructure, obviously, because it's physically in front of us. We can see that. And I'm just asking the AG if that is the discussion that is had with the department, apart from just looking at the controls and the management. Then I also have a question, if the AG can possibly assist me in understanding one of the comments that was made was the school not utilizing schools fully. Now, since the advent of our democracy, a significant amount of money has been spent on infrastructure, specifically in our rural areas. My question to you is there possibly an indication that we can get of how much has been spent in infrastructure, and that includes across all programs, that now is not fully utilized, utilized in the sense that infrastructure is now standing empty? Can we as a committee get such a number? Can the AG assist us with that? And then lastly, my question is around the 240 million that was reported in 2019. The DG made a promise to this committee then that money will be recovered as far as is possible. Does the AG have an indication of what was recovered? The 240 that I'm referring to had to do with the ACIDI. So how much money was recovered as that in that year was reported in terms of expenditure that was irregular or wasteful. That particularly had to do with infrastructure build. Those are my questions, Chair. I hope it was very clear because I'm standing next to the road. Thank you, Chair.
No, it's fine. You were audible. Hello?
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair. Thank you for the valuable comments from the Honorable Members. I'm just going to touch on a few of these questions and hand over to my team, Joshua and Bill, who just assisted some of their full detail. But there was a question, I think it came from Honorable Vitiye, with regard to the audit process, particularly saying what would have been the feel when the AGSA was embarking on the audit 21-22, whether there were instances where we had reached to disagree and instances like that. And I must say, Honorable Vitiye, that in the main, within the basic education sector, we do get support, right? I think we come a long way, where we debated quite a lot, and we still do, and really there wouldn't be instances where we put a finding on the table and they take it as it is. But I think the conversation has been a bit more progressive compared to where we come from. I mean, if I take DBE as a case in point, we come from an era where we would have finalized an audit really agreeing to disagree. But at this point in time, I think for the past 3 or 2 years, when we did put the findings, yes, there were a lot of debate, but we agreed that it is what it is. We afforded each other the opportunity that we needed to afford, and they're here to speak for themselves in terms of how they would have experienced the audit. But I think that when we reflected as the AGSA, the basic education would have been a sector that in the main, we do get support. It's not easy, but I think that in terms of the disputes, we're able to deal with them to a larger extent. Honorable Litiya made a comment on the amendment of the PAA, I think, back in 2020. And I think you're also making a comment around the work that still needs to happen to make sure that we tighten as a sector. And you're right, at that point in time when we got the Act amended, it is only then that we were able to start issuing material irregularities. So the material irregularities that you are seeing from slide number 17 in particular, they were only becoming a reality because of the amendment that came with that Act. But again, it can never be enough for the AGSA to do it on their own, primarily because the audit ordinarily come as an after effect, and it was put so deliberately so that we are not in conflict in terms of the responsibilities of management, the responsibility of an overseer that's supposed to be independent. But again, right at the beginning, Honorable Chair, when I was presenting the second slide that talks to the ecosystem, the stakeholder ecosystem, that is where you see the interdependency, where each of the role players as embedded in the Act and in the legislation ordinarily have to discharge their responsibility, because it will be impossible for the AGSA to carry the whole lot. And most importantly, if we were to do so, we will overreach and will be in conflict with this very same objectivity and independence that the Act asks of us. So yes, I do support the comment from Honorable Shisiye that talks to how best do some of these things get dealt with. And I think it will call upon all the stakeholders. There was a question, maybe let me just start easily by saying AOPO really is just the audit of performance information that the AGSA does on a year-by-year. You remember audit report is in 3 sections. The second section, besides the financial statement, will talk to the audit of predetermined objectives. And I just want to link it to the question that Honorable Sekers, I think, raised at the end to say, do you really measure impact AGSA? When you look at how we audit how we execute the audit of predetermined objectives, we follow the framework on performance report. And the AGSA responsibility says, is everything that is reported transparent? Is it supported? And if you look at how most of the entities define their targets and they define their indicators, they put it in a manner that in the main it will be still input-based. And that's where the big role, Honorable Chair, for the Portfolio Committee and the executives. Because from the audit perspective, the responsibility of the AGSA would be that which they are reporting, is it supported? But if you look at the impact, when they are then describing and making promises at the beginning of the APP, before the APP is presented, it will be important for the committee as well to say, is what you're promising what I would like to see on the ground? From the audit perspective, if they then commit to report on the impact, our audit automatically appreciate that and we zoom into the impact. Right now, what we did, for us to get to the impact, we had to introduce the value add work that we did, both for nutrition as an example, for infrastructure as an example, which becomes an additional activity that we put on just to ensure that we close the loop on the impact. There was a question from Honorable Nodada, and I think you asked a question around, are you able to share with us these projects that had additional costs, meaning they exceeded the budget? Yes, we're able to do so. If you look at slide number 35, we highlighted the provinces that particularly had exceeded the budget for this project. And Chair, we're more than happy just to put it in right in terms of those particular projects per province. We should be able to do so. I just want to pause a bit and hand over to Joshua for some of the nitty-gritty around basic education in particular and the provinces, and also the examples where we said that these indicators or these targets were not smart. And I also hand over to Biltish just to touch on some of the issues on infrastructure. And I'll come back and close the work of the AGSA in terms of what have we learned from COVID and how do we intend on supporting government going forward. Joshua, go ahead.
Thanks very much, B.E. and thanks, Chair. I'll start off with a question that Honorable Nodada asked in terms of what are those indicators that were not useful. In terms of analysis, there were two provinces that had usefulness issues that were reported first, KZN and Western Cape. For KZN, the indicator that was reported not to be well-defined was pertaining to the school nutrition program, where there was an issue that the method of calculation or achieving the plan indicator was not clearly defined, and the calculation of the achievement by management, the annual plan, significantly differed to what the approved technical indicator had indicated for that. So it was also on just the indicator not being defined. And then for the Western Cape, was also the issue on usefulness was the indicator not well defined, and that was relating to the indicator of percentage of learners retained in the school system from grade 1 to 9. Here the issue that we had was the source information for measuring the plan indicator was not clearly defined, and the related systems were not adequate enough for a consistent measuring of that particular indicator. I think the next question that I'll touch on was the question that was asked by the chair regarding to SAES, why are they not improving in terms of performance reporting, and why do they keep, what's the issue? Well, what's the root cause of that? I think in the main, they're not implementing the action plan. And I think what we have previously reported and recommended was that there need to be in-year monitoring in terms of performance information, doing quarterly reporting, collecting the information and clearly reporting on it regularly, so that and fully supported by supporting evidence. So I think, yes, you're right to say that. Are they not implementing? Yeah, because it's a repeat finding, it's a repetitive over the period over the past couple of years. I think those are the ones that for myself I can hand over to Lukesh. Thanks.
Thank you, Joshua and Kavo. The question that I noted was on, there was a question around the implementing agent and the lack of consequence management around that. What we found is when it comes to the management of implementing agents, there's a very big reliance being placed on implementing agents by the client departments. Hence, you would find that consequence management is not being implemented. There was a question around the confirmation of expenditure. I'll just touch on it from the aspect of infrastructure, where when our teams go on site, our teams consist of built environment specialists, which are civil engineers and quantity surveyors. When they go out on site, they would look at the payment certificates with the valuations and confirm what has been constructed on site. There was another question around the utilized or the unutilized facilities. So what we've experienced in the sector is that there were about seven provinces that experienced delays in projects. So when there was a project that was commissioned in the provinces, many of them have been utilized. What we find is that on the ACEDI schools, year in, we find there are one or two schools that haven't been effectively utilized, and that's mainly between the intergovernmental relationship between national and provincial that seems to be a bit of a hindrance there to get the schools to be fully utilized. I think that's all I've recorded from my side, Fabul. Thank you.
Thanks, Bilkish. I think one of the other questions that was asked was regarding the implementing agents, what do they not do, or that caused the irregular expenditure. One of the things that we highlighted and the main cause of the non-compliance was awarding bids to bidders who did not score the highest point, and the non-disclosure of local declaration of local content as required by the National Treasury Regulations and Instruction Notes. There was also a question posed by the chairperson regarding the KZN in terms of the costing of what we're reporting here. I think what we're reporting here, Chair, is what we, in the report that the Auditor General tabled in September regarding the relief interventions that we audited, and these are the ones that we looked at in terms of the expenditure that had occurred, the documentation that we reviewed during the audit at that time. And I think related to that as well, there was a question as well to say, is it an indication that the entire 356 schools that were damaged due to the flood, or there were other repairs that needs to be done due to other interventions? I think what the department did was just to do an entire analysis of what needs to be done. Some could be relating to the current year, to the flood issues that happened in April, but certain other schools as well, the evaluation that was done by the department was to evaluate to say, yes, much as these were not affected, but we will need to consider repairing and maintaining them in the future going forward. So what we looked at was not the entire scope of the categories of repairs that were required. The department has done an analysis where the repairs and maintenance were categorized from A, B, C, indicating that A being minor repairs, B medium repairs, and C significant repairs. And those ones, categorization of C required repairs over a period of time. So what we looked at was just the minor repairs in the interim. But as the spending continues, then we look at the intervention of the spending or repairs that happened when the department starts spending on those repairs. Thanks, Chair, and Kako, back to you.
Thank you very much. Chair, I just want to reflect on the question asked by Honorable Adjunct in terms of what do the AG recommend, especially with regard to the employment initiatives that come 2023. So one of the things that we acknowledge as the AGSA is that that particular intervention provided some sort of a relief to many families. That is a given, and it can be debated. But we're saying that as a sector, when you started to envisage this intervention, you had a framework in place. And that is a framework that we followed in audit. And part of that framework, you had a targeted group of people that you wanted to attend to. And in the main, it was the youth. So we are asking that as a sector, can we reflect and determine if our aspiration still incorporates targeting and attending to the youth, then we need to say, how are we going to reach the youth in the second phase, as opposed to what we would have done in the first place. And we really need to reflect on what would have necessitated us deviating from the targeted youth to the elderly. But one of the things that is very clear there is that the usage of government data, because part of the things that we're picking up is that you are giving people employment that government is already providing some sort of a relief one way or the other, right? So if somebody else is receiving a grant and is sitting in government systems, how is education as a sector going to access that type of data? And that's where we talk to the interlinkage with other departments so that you're able to tap into the SASSA data as an example. You're able to tap into UIF data as an example and determine who could be applying and really is not as needy as they could be, as much as whatever the grant that they may be getting may not be enough, but at least also compared to somebody else that did not get. And that just means that as a sector, we need to just reflect on how are we going to access the very same data that government owns in any case. So those are the key recommendations that we would like to put through. And we had engagement with the department, just in terms of the training as well, that acknowledging that in the first phase, it would have been difficult, it was short notice, and people had to get on board as soon as we can. There is an opportunity for us to reflect on what are the gaps in trying to make sure that this initiative not only benefits money-wise, but it benefits skill-wise and therefore sustainable to make sure that people are more employable going into the future. So those will be some of these things that we are highlighting. I just want to reflect a bit on the question that was asked to say, AG, we saw the good work that was done during COVID, and we see you now reverting back to the historic work. And we have not necessarily reverted, but we are acknowledging that our teams will be a bit stretched. The work that was done in the KZN in particular was, again, a special audit that was done, similar to what is done during the COVID. So we needed to pick the areas that are not necessarily, that were not anticipated at the beginning of the year, so that we see how best we support government. If you think of the ordinary run of the department of an entity, all rail players are clearly mapped in the value chain, which would mean that if all of us just were to pull the things that we needed to do at government level, meaning the senior management, the officials in different sections, right up until accounting officer and the likes. Ordinarily, some of these things can be prevented even before the AGSA come in. Because you remember, Chair, that we still have to run the normal audit in line with the Public Audit Act and the PSMA, right? Which means that won't push us to give an opinion. But at the same time, we are continuously analyzing the areas that can benefit government in trying to be there early. But what is sustainable for us would be the things that are not necessarily unexpected, which means that from the beginning of the year, as the entities, as departments, we plan for these things to happen. Can we just make sure that everybody do their part so that it does not necessarily take the AGSA when they come at the end of the cycle to highlight some of these things? But again, we are utilizing the room that government allowed or parliament allowed us to exercise in terms of the material irregularity. And I think I just want to tap on the recovery question that was put on the table in line with what the DBE would have recovered. To our record, we highlighted that DBE would have recovered around 16 million so far in terms of just the material irregularity processes. But we're not taking away the fact that they're still doing investigation, they're still doing reconciliation with some of the service providers. But in terms of the money that would have came back, the one that would have audited would have been that much. Chair, may I just pause here? The question you asked around the service providers, the name of the service providers which caused irregular expenditure, we're more than happy to put it in writing for the chair and the committee. May I just pause here for now, Chair, and just see if there's something critical that we may have missed. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Kim Asa. I think you have responded to our questions, Rabo and the team. And I really want to release you because we are 34 minutes behind our schedule, and I know we also have meetings that you need to rush to. I must say thank you very much for the briefing that you have given to us. I think it has... DG Ukwana Manje. I didn't notice. I didn't notice. Let me give you then.
Thank you, Chair. I've been in and out of the meeting. Like Honorable Sukers, I'm on the road, but I've been part of the meeting. My profuse apologies that earlier on you couldn't get me. Let me also add my voice in thanking the AG for the presentation. Fully agree that we agree with the findings that they have made. My humble appeal in the interest of time, Chair, is that whilst there's a lot that still needs to be done, the presentations must be seen in the light of the fact that we come from qualifications, five of them, which were reduced to three and I think eventually two. Last financial year, we had matters of emphasis. This financial year, we don't even have matters of emphasis. We've got other matters. Plus, of course, material irregularity. And let me just also indicate that the business executive is right. We started on a very difficult mode where it was almost confrontational. We had to come to a point where we realized that it's not going to work. And part of the solution was that the AG helps the accounting officer to realize his obligations in terms of Section 38 of the PFMA. It can only work and add value to the department if we work together with the AGSA. And in addition to that, the business executive talks about the ecosystem of role players. We have a very strong audit committee, which holds us vigorously accountable. And the improvement that you have seen is because of those, the ecosystem of role players, including the deputy minister and the minister, who do not say these things are operational, we take a back step, the DG and his team will see to finish. They also hold us accountable on a weekly basis. But I want to say that we'll provide all the information we are due for the presentation of the annual report to your honorable committee and honorable members. But let's remember where we're coming from. We're not talking about a department that's qualified, a department that still has matters of emphasis, but there's still a lot to be done. In terms of the sector audits, there are issues that we need to deal with. And for the year under review, the focus, of course, was on infrastructure. The focus was on National School Nutrition Program. The focus was on Presidential Youth Employment Initiative. Even there, we'll give you information to say, what have we put in place to make sure that what was picked up by the AG is no longer going to be picked up. I don't want to take much of your time because it's not our day today. It's your day with the AGSA. But I want to confirm the AGSA is doing an excellent job. And for us to improve, you can even ask the AG here. Departments that are cited as departments that have made commendable progress in terms of material irregularity, they can tell you which department it is. I don't want to say it because I'll sound like blowing my own horn. But in the interest of time, Chair, I think we'll provide more information in terms of what is required, including irregular expenditure, breaking it down, the company, what actually happened there, because the impression is that all of it we need to recover. And I think the business executive has explained it very well, including Joshua, that it was about local content. Where there's fruitless and wasteful expenditure, we have to recover. Where there's money owed to the department, the AG has reported how much has been recovered and how much are we still going to recover. And we can't also act on this thing. Part of consequence management is delayed by the fact that the investigation has not happened. Until then, you can't act. But we'll provide more information on this when we appear before your honorable committee and yourself. Thank you for the privilege, Chair. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much, DG. Thank you very much. I think let's try to close it here with all the comments and all the what we think. But I think from my side, and probably some of the or all rather members of the committee would say that at a personal level, I am worried of SAIDS, DG. I am worried of SAIDS, Khabo. I think we are all oversight bodies, but we cannot continue to have this type of an audit outcome from SAIDS. And I think I want to raise it really strongly that probably we all need to put our hands on deck, and there should be, DG, some sort of an consequence management where the money is given and they can't be management or rather accountability for it. So I think for SAIDS as an entity, something more needs to be done to change the issues of the status quo. And I'm putting it in the meeting because I believe the department has got the capacity to assist or rather to deal with the issues that are facing SAIDS as an entity. On that note, I am closing this meeting with the AG. But the meeting is not closed, but rather we are releasing the team AG till we meet again probably next year, as our annual briefings from yourselves. Thank you very much, Khabo, and your team. I'm now giving over to Honorable Advance to lead us on FFC issues. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and the report and the presentation that was given to us. We really appreciate that. Chair, I don't know if we can maybe take a 15-minute break before we continue. If maybe I can check with members because we've been in this meeting from half past 9, it's now quarter past or 30 minutes past 12. If you can take a 15 minutes break and then start at half past 12. Are we good, members? Can you do that or can you just continue from now on till we finish?
Let's continue, Chair. I'm voting for continuation.
Okay.
No problem. Now I thought that we must, you know, have to a leg stretch and smoke breaks and allow members just to have some water or tea or something so that when we enter to our next meeting, we're still fresh in our minds and we'll be able to participate fully. But it's fine if members feel that we can continue as we are. Then let me also take this opportunity then to welcome you again, members, and also we'll have the team from FFC that will be presenting to us today. I'm sure the DG is still with us and the entire team of the basic education. Who is
there? We are here.
Not really a PG that you are here. Mr. Brown, can you assist with the agenda and who is going to be leading the presentation from the FFC?
Thank you, Chairperson. FFC are represented in the meeting, and I think we should maybe hand over to Ms. Dr. Mbava from FFC, because they will then take on the presentation on behalf of FFC. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, good afternoon. I'm not sure if our presentation is slided. Sabelo, can you go just to the first slide? Just to say thank you so much as the Financial and Fiscal Commission to the Portfolio Committee for having afforded us this opportunity to present our analysis on the sector. I think I will go to the next slide just briefly to introduce who is the FFC. The Financial and Fiscal Commission is a constitutional body mandated through the Constitution to provide advice on financial and fiscal matters across all three spheres of government. Through focused research and the use of highly sophisticated economic modeling tools, the Commission provides proactive, expert, and independent advice on promoting the intergovernmental fiscal relations system. Through evidence-based policy analysis, we aim to ensure the realization of constitutional values. Quite important to note, Honorable Chairperson and members, that all legislation that pertains to financial and fiscal matters can only be enacted after the recommendations of the Financial and Fiscal Commission have been considered. Can you go to the next slide, please? Thank you so much. Honorable members, as you would appreciate, South Africa allocates a significant portion of its consolidated spending to basic education. However, over the last few years, and more specifically, since the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, spending on basic education has been impacted by the need to reprioritize and cut spending across government. As a result, key basic education funding sources, such as the provincial equitable share and basic education related conditional grants, have been reduced, subjected to slower real growth, which is anticipated to continue over the medium term. Given that resources are scarce, the spending efficiency and effectiveness of education allocation are important, as well as the need to identify the essential elements of educational expenditure that need to be prioritized to ensure the right education.
Dr. Nombeko, can you please mute your video, because now you are starting to break. Please mute your video.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much, Chairperson. So in this regard, Chairperson, our presentation will touch on the analysis on infrastructure expenditure trends, non-infrastructure conditional grants, equity in education, and we'll also end with strong recommendations on how government can implement our recommendations. Next slide, please. On the next slide, Chair, I'd like to hand over to the research team to take a through analysis. Over to you, Sianda or Shafika or Sabelo.
Good day. Well, let me share my data first. Okay, good day, honorable members and our chairperson, members of the committee. I'm Sabelo to draw the first part of the presentation and then allow other colleagues to continue. Yes, as our chairperson has indicated, the issues that we covered here and are in line with the letter, the invitation letter that we received from the committee.
around the issue that will prevent. The first issue that will prevent on is infrastructure grants and how are they performing. So what we've done, according to invitation, we received invitation to reflect on the performance of ASIDI, of school infrastructure backlog grant. And then what we did over and above this, we also touched on the other key infrastructure grant, which is education infrastructure grant, that is EIG. Then in terms of ASIDI, Accelerated Schools Infrastructure Grant Initiative, which is a project that was established in 2011, the key tool or funding tool for that, for this program is called Infrastructure Backlog Grant. And then why was it established? It was established during that year to eradicate an unsafe physical school infrastructure that we had around the country, and also to eliminate some school backlog, infrastructure backlog. Remember that during that time we had some mud schools that were built before and by maybe by school governing body and by communities, and those were deemed to be inappropriate. Then one of the aim was just to eliminate such inadequate infrastructure to ensure that they do comply to norms and standards. And lastly was to upgrade those schools to meet those prescribed norms and standards for school infrastructure. And then what we've seen, or when the ASIDI or school infrastructure grant was established, it was established as a temporary intervention or measure to address those issues around the school infrastructure backlog. But what we've seen is that this infrastructure grant continued until this year, as we still have it. But it was scheduled to end around 2017-2018. And then again, I would like to relate this to one of our research projects that we undertook and which was submitted with recommendations in May this year around the work of commercial grants. How are they established, and then are they established to achieve particular purpose? Do they achieve particular purpose? Are they how long do they take before they are being terminated or complete? Because we found that while they were established as a temporary interventions, but they continue beyond the time that was set to, because at that time what they were intended to what was not achieved. Then we have a full chapter which speaks to that, and members can also read through our submission that was done May this year, which elaborates more on these issues. And then again, the grant is characterized by a complex delivery chain involvement. HGSA has reflected on this issue because of how this grant is implemented. There's a lot of agencies that are involved, and then there are a lot of complicated value chain challenges. Hence, with agencies here like DPSA, Imvula Trust, IIPT, there's a number of them. Then these complex delivery chains have affected to a certain extent the performance of the grant. Okay, here this slide shows the performance of the grant in terms of what has been allocated over the years from 2011, since it was established, to 2021-22, that is the last financial year. And then the green or the blue bar is just amount allocated, and then the red or orange shows what was spent out of the total allocation for that particular year. And then the trend line just shows the explanation in terms of percentages. What we note here is that when it was established, the performance was very, very bad, because in terms of spending, what the amount that was allocated, the percentage that was spent remained very low in earlier years. And then this is not a surprise, given that in earlier years of introduction of the grant, then we've realized that these grants, they do perform badly because they are trying, departments are still trying to plan about how to implement them. But as you can see in 2014-15, there was an improvement because there we got about close to 100% of what was allocated was spent. It was 94%. But we also see a decline after that. And then now that is a question because after the grant has been to the system and departments are aware, they do plan around it capacity-wise, et cetera, then they should maintain the higher expenditure. But we see this grant, what happened, there was a decline after that. Probably it's because of those supply chain management issues around the implementing agencies. As you can see in 2016-19, the percentage that was spent was only 60% of what was allocated, which was bad. And again, later year, around 21-22, we see an improvement because expenditure, you can see, is back to 100%. The other key infrastructure grant that we touched on is just the education infrastructure grant, which is aimed to address issues around upgrading the reputation of new and existing infrastructure in education and to restore the dignity of learners and address damaged education infrastructure and to meet minimum norms and standards for school infrastructure. Then the key to note here is that this grant is a Schedule 4 concession grant to provinces. Then what does it mean? It means provinces are also required or expected to make contributions from their PS to fund this infrastructure grant. Now, the biggest question here is how, and then this again you will see in our chapter for which on the submission that I've spoken about that was submitted earlier in May. The key issue or challenge here is that we all know that provinces do not have enough revenue sources. And then now this grant requires provinces to allocate some funds from their PS, which is when we know that is constrained because much of that, a large percentage of that is spent on personnel around education and on health. Then they are left with a little to spend or to put more on what has been allocated from this grant. So those are challenges that we did raise to say some of the designs of this grant are questionable because knowing that provinces will be unable to do that, but this grant is expecting provinces to do that. And over the past few years, what we've seen is that allocation to this grant has been reduced as Chairperson Dr. Mbava has indicated due to fiscal consolidation efforts. And then this slide, it shows the nominal growth with respect to this grant. And you can see how uneven it is. It grew by 2.7% and then to 17% and drop again, it grew at 9.9% and again 27%. So it is uneven, the growth here. But with respect to the spending of this grant, unlike the ACD one, that is called Infrastructure Backlog Grant, we've seen that this grant has been spending quite good because expenditure was close to 100% and 90-something%. It didn't go down to 60% like we have seen to the other grant. Chairperson, allow me to hand over to Sasha to continue with part two of the presentation. Thanks.
Thank you, Sabelo, and good morning, Chairperson, members of the committee and other colleagues. If we can move to the next slide, please, Sabelo. Chair, the next few slides focus on the expenditure trends characterizing the non-infrastructure conditional grants. So Sabelo looked at the key infrastructure funding instruments being ACD and the EIG. So we'll just give you a snapshot of the performance of the non-infrastructure grants. And what the slide there shows are those four non-infrastructure conditional grants, namely your National School Nutrition Program grant, the Math, Science and Technology conditional grant, the HIV and AIDS Life Skills Education Grant and the Conditional Grant for Learners with Profound Intellectual Disabilities. And in terms of our analysis, the period we reviewed is from 2015-16 up until 21-22. And on aggregate, 9.4 billion is allocated in respect of non-infrastructure conditional grants in 2021-22. The largest conditional grant, as members will know, is the National School Nutrition Program, which received just over 8.4 billion in 2019-20. And the smallest grant there is the one allocated in respect of learners with profound intellectual disabilities, which was allocated 262 million in 2021-22. When looking at the growth rates of these conditional grants, which is reflected in the lower half of the table, we see that the fastest growing conditional grant in 2021-22 is the HIV and AIDS conditional grant, as well as the math, science and technology grant. It shows a recovery relative to the cuts that were, the deep cuts that were experienced as a result of the reprioritization of spending at the height of the COVID pandemic. The grant that showed the slowest growth in allocations was the Learners with Profound Intellectual Disabilities grant, which grew by 2.6% as of 2021. We also focus on the spending performance of the four non-infrastructure conditional grants. And by spending performance, we are referring to the extent to which the allocated amounts were spent. And on the whole, spending has been aligned to allocations, though we note that the conditional grant for learners with profound intellectual disabilities and the math, science and technology grants show relatively slower spending performance of 88.5% and 89% of the budgets being spent. And while we underscore the need to root out the drivers of underspending, we also need to view the performance of these grants against the events of the past 2 years. So if you look at the orange colored bars, those reflect spending performance for 2020-21. And we see spending was low across all conditional grants as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and its associated impacts. So relative to the poor spending in 2020-21, spending performance across all the grants have improved notably, which is a welcome development. But what we need to focus on is dealing with those perennial drivers that still give rise to underspending, which according to the DBE's annual report includes delays by service providers to deliver on time, delays in filling vacant posts, and delays, particularly delays in supply chain management processes. So these are challenges that were probably all exacerbated by the impact of the pandemic, but we need to acknowledge that they were there even before the pandemic. And so there is a need to continue strengthening internal controls and tighter monitoring to improve spending performance of these grants. We also noted when looking at the provinces that drive underspending on these conditional grants, so it's not shown on the slide, but when we look at the province level spending performance, with respect to the poor spending, when we looked at the learners with profound intellectual disabilities grant, we see that the Eastern Cape and the Free State tend to show lower spending rates in 2021 and 2019, and even the years prior to that. With respect to the math, science and technology grant, the Eastern Cape and Limpopo tend to come up when looking at poor spending performance over the years. So it may be worthwhile for the national DBE to see what type of technical and other assistance or support they can provide to these provinces who seem to be encountering challenges year on year with spending their conditional grant amounts. Because, you know, we need to remember that monitoring and supporting provincial departments is one of the key functions of a national department in the case of a concurrent function such as basic education. If I can hand over to my colleague Shafika to take us through the last part of the presentation, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Sasha. Good afternoon, Chairperson, committee members and colleagues. So I will take us through the equity part of the presentation. So as we're all aware that the press contributes a significant portion of the provincial fiscal framework, which is a large, which is an important source of funding for education. It's also important to note that as one of the largest components in the formula, the PES formula is heavily data dependent, and any changes to population or data would ultimately have significant changes to the province share in various components of the allocation. It is also interesting to note that in our current annual submission, the Commission reviewed the PES allocations and the findings were pertinent to, which are pertinent to basic education are as follows. It was noted that the PES allocation is significantly skewed towards compensation of employees, which was one of the key drivers being that the PES allocation did not take into consideration the wage bargaining processes in determining allocations to provinces. The other major factor contributing to the high personal cost in provinces that were identified during the stakeholder engagements was the teacher skills gap. As a result of the rising pressures of provinces to compensate employees, the study showed that in order to to deal with these pressures, allocations to cost to goods and services were compromised or cut, which ultimately leads to the quality of education as learner materials are affected thus. Next slide, please. So when dealing, looking at education equity, it's two-dimensional. We're looking at equal treatment, fairness and social justice, and then equal opportunity. It is noted that the current CAPS curriculum sets a basic minimum standard of education. South Africa has achieved equality through the no-fee school and open school choice policies. However, attaining equity remains a challenge because current policies and funding does not address the barriers to education potential. equity in school, so we know that the South African Schools Act requires government to fund schools adequately and equitably, and the national norms and standards for school funding intends to reduce disparities. However, poor schools continue to experience structural systematic challenges, systemic challenges. Some provinces are finding it difficult to support under-resourced schools. The next two slides will provide more detail on the national norms and standards and will show how provinces are struggling to fund in line with the minimum level of funding set by the national department. So through the South African national norms and standards for school funding is pivotal to the Department of Basic Education's plan to bring about more equitable approach to school funding. As members would know that the national norms and standards is based on a quintile approach to funding, whereby quintile one includes the neediest schools and quintile five is the most affluent. According to the national norms and standards, learners in quintile 1 to 3 schools are not required to pay fees. Each year, the department sets these targets per learner amount for each quintile. Provincial departments are thus expected to fund the learners in accordance to these thresholds. Next slide, please. So from the table on the slide, the national set target thresholds for each quintile for 2020, 21 and 22. This is shown in the last row below, which indicates that 1,536 is the allocation per learner for quintile 1 to 3. Quintile 4 receives 770 rand per learner and quintile 5 is set at 266. The table shows funding relative to the national threshold for all 9 provinces. It's interesting to note the differences in the funding across these provinces. We note that the Free State, Limpopo and Northwest are all funding in line with the national threshold. It should also be noted that some provinces fund specific quintiles higher than the set amount. Examples of this is Gauteng province, which funds quintile 5 more than the threshold, and the Western Cape is funding both quintile 4 and 5 higher than the national threshold. The inverse is also true for Northern Cape, where they're funding quintile 1 to 3 below the national threshold, but from the table it's clear that the province is providing quintile 4 and 5 more than the set amount. From the table, it is also can also be seen that KZN and Mpumalanga has been funding all quintiles below the national threshold for the review. However, this is a trend in KZN since 2014. The trend in the Eastern Cape shows that in 2021, the province is funding below the threshold for all quintiles. Next slide, please. So with our conclusion from the presentation above shows that infrastructure grants are key to ensuring schools have adequate infrastructure for learning to take place. However, there has been inconsistent growth on both infrastructure and non-infrastructure grants. Year-on-year analysis shows that the school infrastructure backlog grant funding is declining, and HIV and AIDS. We note that there has been improvement in the performance of both infrastructure and non-infrastructure grants, with the school infrastructure backlog grant reaching 100% spending in the 21-22 financial year. However, there is still room for improvement on non-infrastructure grants in areas such as supply chain management processes and procurement plans. From the analysis, it is also evident that some provinces have been consistently funding schools below the national threshold, thus negatively impacting education outcomes. The Commission is therefore recommending that a minimum of all provinces should at least strive to meet the minimum threshold set nationally. Here, we would also like to to emphasize the recommendations from the 2023-24 submission, which had both looked at the PES and the infrastructure grants. So the Commission recommends that the Department of Basic Education applies a costed norms approach where full costing exercise is undertaken so that we could understand what provision of education is provided and what the impact of any cuts would be going forward. Government needs to also protect the redistributive nature of the basic education funding system in the face of potential basic education budget constraints. Here, we also like to highlight that there should be improved coordination between the infrastructure delivery plans and programs to ensure alignment between the PES and conditional grant allocation between the National Department of Basic Education and all provincial departments of education, to update the allocation formula for the EIG grant to ensure the alignment of grant needs to indicators with grant objectives, and further streamline expected and reported grant outputs to improve focus and ease of monitoring. Furthermore, the final recommendation was for the DBE to undertake a skills audit to identify the skills gap with respect to the old and new curriculum, identifying the number of teachers who needs to be trained and the funding requirements, as well as developing and implementing a training program to address these shortages. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Over to you, Chairperson of the committee. That concludes our presentation.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Mbaba and the team. Members, that is the presentation. It was not that long. only 21 slides. Can I then hand over to members to post questions, comments, advice by the show of hands? Let me know to members. I don't see any hands, but for those who want to pose questions and cannot raise hands, can you also indicate? I see the hand of Honorable Lucia. No, any other hands? Okay. Honorable Lucia.
Good day, Whip, acting chair for the session. Chair, I want to appreciate the presentation of Asidi. Just one question before I go to other questions. So I'm going to request Chair that they respond to this one. It's a small question, but it's clarity seeking, so that I can ask more questions better. I see the DG Chair has raised the hand. Maybe we allow him before we ask. Maybe there's something he wants to clarify. I'm not sure. What do you think?
No, continue. I'm sharing on our list here. Continue. We'll give the DG after you. Continue.
You're in charge. Chair, I just want to ask, Asidi is the, you can just respond quickly. Are they the implementing agency for infrastructure in all the schools?
Hey, are you done on our list here?
No, I was saying I've got one question that I want to ask now, so that they and then I can follow up. I've got many follow-up questions depending on their answer to this one. So I don't want to ask questions and the answer will be no to this one or yes. So let them just clarify that part. Are they the ones who are implementing agencies of the Department on Infrastructure, ne?
Okay. Dr. Nombeu, can you respond to that? DG will give you, I've noted you.
Thank you so much. The research team will have the details. Sasha, can you answer that, please?
Thank you, Dr. Mbava. Honorable Lesia, the ACD is the program, the infrastructure program, and then the funding instrument is the school's infrastructure backlogs grant.
No, thank you very much.
So ACD is not the implementing agent.
Yes.
And the grant itself is an indirect grant. So it's not like your normal grants where the money flows to the provincial education department, and then the provincial education departments spend it. With this one, which is an indirect grant, it's managed by the national DBE. So that's why it's an indirect grant.
No, thank you very much for the clarity, and thanks, Chair, for allowing them to clarify this, because I wanted to check based on the AG's report we've just received, that there was an instance where a contractor claimed loss to the department, or you know, on an infrastructure, on a building that they were busy with, based on the department missing the 30-day payment and the contractor claimed losses and all of that. So I thought maybe ACD was responsible for that. So I would have asked questions based on that. But if they are not, if they were not involved in their chair, then I don't have any questions for them. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much. DG?
Thank you very much. I want to commend the chair of the FSC and the team for such a good report. Just a tongue-in-cheek, chair, I'm quite thrilled that this time around is the first time in my entire career that I hear the research team coming quite strong, arguing for more financial resources for provinces. Maybe one might have to reconsider and go back to the province, because it's quite heartwarming, and it's the first time that I hear, you know, the FSC coming so strong, arguing, you know, that provinces are not funded as they should. And I'm sure provinces will be extremely thrilled to hear this story from the FSC. The second point is that I do not agree with a member of the research team that the reason why provinces do not allocate funds for infrastructure is because they are squeezed. There are two provinces that attempted, Western Cape and Gauteng. The other provinces never attempted to do that. And I'm saying this out of experience as well. You've also seen what used to be infrastructure allocation from the equitable share moving to other line departments other than being kept. If the argument made by the colleague from the research team is anything to go by, that money doesn't remain within education. It goes to other departments for capital investment, for infrastructure rollout. So the notion of saying it goes to other, you know, cost drivers that seem to indicate pressure, I don't seem to be convinced about that. I don't think it's correct. In fact, provincial executive councils take decisions to reallocate money which used to be allocated for education infrastructure. They take it to transport and roads. You can go and check the records in provinces like the Eastern Cape and others, including the province where I come from, the Northwest, instead of keeping it within education. Education in terms of personnel allocation is still really, maybe that's why even the recommendation by the member of the team is to say, we need to do a skills audit of implementing the old and the new curriculum and cost it. And that information we have, by the way, it's readily available. Mr. Farayaki's yes, can tell you, for coding and robotics, you only work out the number of schools and learners who are offering that. You don't do your normal skills audit. Then it tells you how many teachers you require, how many people at SMT, et cetera, and et cetera. The 11 technical subjects that we introduced in 500 schools, that information is available. We can make that available. I thought the portfolio committee will also ask this question that I raised in the last appearance of the FSC, to say what progress has been made to address poverty in terms of using, I think it was between 3% and 5% of the poverty index, in terms of allocating equitable share, particularly for provinces such as Eastern Cape, Limpopo and KZN, as opposed to provinces like Western Cape and Gauteng. And whether the issue of informal settlement, is it not an important factor also to inform a poverty index, given the fact that people from informal settlement, many of them would be coming from poor provinces. My assumption is that that index should follow them from where they come from to Gauteng, like the Western Cape, in the informal settlement. And to what extent would that also then influence, you know, the allocation of those provinces? Thank you, Chair, for the privilege. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Lucia and DG. I don't know if there are any other hands, members that would want to speak before we give over to the FFC to respond to some of the questions. But if not, maybe also let me pose some few questions and my observations, of which I fully, you know, agree with the observations and findings of the of the FFC. I think they are also mindful of some of the challenges that are faced by schools, mainly the poor schools or schools that have, you know, a low income or even none for that matter, that are fully relying on grants for them to, you know, to exist, like your quintile 1 to 3, as it's been indicated in some of the presentations that or slides that we have seen in the presentation. But earlier on, I think there was a question raised by Honorable Mwasetla that was misplaced during the presentation by AG SA, which was about the uncertainty of the quality of the expenditure that was for the FFC, because he kept on repeating that FFC, you know, asserting the quality of expenditure. So each and every question that he was raising, he was referring to the FFC. One other question was on which specific programs did the FFC identify as not equitably supported. I think that was the two questions that I had earlier on. But on my side, it's on the math and science is critical in the department's allocation, as was indicated in the presentation. My question is there any department allocation to the grant commensurable to the need, and whether there is any gender analysis of the education expenditure, and lastly, maybe what is the impact of the grant on job creation and economic development? Those will be my questions. Thank you very much. Can I hand over to you, Dr. Mbaba?
Thank you so much, Chairperson, for those questions. I note we have the head of research on the platform, Chen. I don't know if you have any comments. And then I would like the respective experts in the specific sectors to answer some of the questions. Just to also touch on the question you asked about the gender issue, Chairperson, recently we've had where we go through the provinces looking at the Women's Charter, and the analysis on that as well was on the spending on key sectors in the provinces. We looked at education and we looked at health. In some of the provinces, we found that within the education sector itself, there were still gender imbalances in terms of the spending. But we have detailed analysis per province on gender as pertaining to the spending on education. We can also share that with the committee as relevant. But in this instance, I want to find out if Chen is available to just have a few comments. I'm not sure if Commissioner Mokadi is still on the platform. If not, Chen, you can go ahead.
Thank you, Chair, and greetings, afternoon, Honourable Chair and members, and of course also thanks to the AG and the proceedings that that occurred today. It was very informative with the colleagues from the AG. Ultimately, I would like to bring in 2 points. One is in particular with regards to a CD, and also remembering that it's a program that started almost a decade ago, and initially there was a drive essentially to a huge infrastructure drive but instead of the provincial perspective, that is the EIG, Education Infrastructure Grant, a direct grant to this CD, an indirect grant. Just want to supplement what earlier Sasha had said. Yeah, it's indirect in the sense that the national department acts on behalf of the provinces and in the and in implementing, building those the backlog infrastructure, things like toilets, water, electricity, many of which are critical basic services required by schools. And once it's done, it should be transferred to provincial departments, provincial governments to take over and maintain and especially keep this infrastructure running, going. That was and back in 2018-19, and Sasha can correct me again as well, FSC has actually done some research and in terms of that particular initiative, in that in essence, whenever there are any direct grants amalgamated or transformed into indirect grant, it's in effect in a IGFR structure, it's a re-centralization because it's essentially money wouldn't go through provinces, as Sasha correctly said, it would go through national, and then the national would spend and implement. And it has certain risks. Now, 2022, we are seemingly moving towards more of a decentralized method of transfers. And again, I think, so noting this trend and this shift, right, 10 years ago, there was quite a lot of push for indirect grants and now direct grants. I think ultimately it's about a lesson, learning that lesson, is that whether, it's about whether provinces, they have a way, particular way of infrastructure. A national government has got a particular way of infrastructure and local government has got its particular way of infrastructure. I think this distinction needs to be very, very clear in understanding which sphere is closer to the people in servicing them in the right way in the manner of infrastructure. And I think, and I wouldn't say which sphere does what better. I don't think that's the point. The point is that whether through this transformation over the decade, what have we learned and what direction we're going towards, and fine, we're going back perhaps a bit more decentralized direction, but what in terms of our grant structure, framework, conditions and management can be done better in that regard, because ultimately at the end of the day, we want outcome, good quality outcome of infrastructure investments. Thank you, Chair, and to the team.
Thanks so much. Not sure if any of the team members, Sabelo, your thoughts, and Sasha, Shafika.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think just to come in on the question about the quality of spending, I think a good starting point is to think about in terms of our spending guidelines, you know, prudent financial management practice would tell you that it's acceptable to have under or overspending on either side, whether it's over or under, and keep within a 5% range. So if you're underspending, don't go beyond underspending more than 5% of your budget. But when we look at the DBE's spending performance, and yeah, I can speak on the non-infrastructure conditional grants. If you look just purely at spending performance, how the allocated amounts were spent, the DBE seems to be performing. But obviously, what is key is what we are buying with the spending. Is it in line with the objectives and the quality that we want? And there, I think the critical issues would be
to consider what the AG raised in terms of performance. And as we had said in our slides, we need to still strengthen our internal controls and our oversight just to keep our spending in line with, you know, our anticipated outcomes. In terms of programs that should receive greater support, it's those programs that are acutely pro-poor in nature. So, for example, your per-learner allocations, which strive to, where the aim is to allocate relatively more funding to your poorer learners, your quintile 1, 2, 3 learners. Those are the types of pockets of funding that we need to protect when budgets are strained and when cuts need to happen or when reprioritizations need to happen. We need to not just take a blanket approach and cut everything, but let's protect those pockets of funding that ensure relatively more funding towards our poorest of the poor learners. In terms of the FSCs recommending more funding for provinces, I think Shafika will probably speak a bit, or Sabela, more to this, but I think our research this year did show how provincial education departments are being squeezed, especially with the escalating personnel costs. If I may please hand over to either Shafika or Sabela. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Sasha, and thanks all honorable members for questions. I'll just reflect on what Sasha has started and then said we must just respond on. Yes, from our PS analysis project, research project that we undertook, we realized one of the findings was an increasing personnel cost with respect to, particularly on, if we look at provinces, there are many responsible for education and health. Then we saw that recently there's an increase on personnel expenditure on those. And then in trying to do a bit of research on what are some of the drivers for that personnel, increase in personnel costs, and then it was this central bargaining. But with respect to education, one issue that came clear when we were engaging with some of the province stakeholders around, which led us to recommend that there must be a skills gap audit. DG, when we were referring to that skills gap audit, we're referring to the fact that what we found was that some provinces, because they have teachers that were trained using older curriculum, then if there are some developments to implement new curriculum, and then some of those teachers are unable, and then new teachers will be employed, increasing the numbers of teachers while the older teachers are there, because they are unable to deliver on that new curriculum. And then that also increases cost of personnel costs. That's what we picked up from those engagements. And if I may also respond to one question on the impact of grants expenditure on development. The only thing I think that we can see, and we can definitely see, yes, is positive development, is that when we look at the backlog that is going down, or infrastructure, school infrastructure delivered over these years, then we could see those infrastructure grants have resulted in or there's been some economic development there's been development in fact, because we would see the physical mud schools replaced maybe by a brick school, which is according to the norms and standards that are required. But further than that, I think Sasha was right by referring to the AG's report to say we can only see numbers as we're sitting here and going through annual reports. But the AG have done a great job by visiting some of those sites and see the quality, because we might say 100 schools have been delivered. Maybe out of that 100, 80 schools are just showed or they are not up to standard. Let me hand over to Shafika if she needs to add anything. Thanks.
Thank you,
Thank you, Sabelo. I've been covered by both Sasha and Sabelo in regards to the PEF allocation and the findings in the annual submission. Thank you.
Thank you so much to the research team. Honorable Chairperson, I think as a commission, we would just want to reiterate our previous recommendation that a proper costing of the delivery of education services should be undertaken to address the cost drivers of education across the provinces to make sure that there's adequacy of basic education spending. And also, we believe that government needs to protect the redistributive nature of the basic education funding system in the face of potential basic education budget cuts and constraints. So we must make sure that those constitutional values of access to education are protected at all costs. Thank you so much, Chairperson. Over to you.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Nombeko Mbava, if I'm pronouncing your name correct, and your team. I think you have done justice to the presentation and also in your responses. Members, I don't know if there's anything that you'd want to make your last round before we close this meeting. If not, then let me thank everyone for attending ever since 9:30 this morning. Thank the Office of the Auditor General. I know they're still in the meeting. And also the FFC team, and also the department and all the honorable members that are in the platform. We're going to adjourn this meeting now, and then we'll reconvene at 4 o'clock till 6 o'clock for engagement and interaction with the audit committee of the Department of Basic Education. Am I correct, Mr. Brown?
Thank you, Honorable Adunsi. You are correct. We will reconvene again at 4 o'clock this afternoon.
Okay. No, thank you very much, everyone. This meeting stand adjourned.
Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you.
I'll leave the chair.
Meet you at 4, Honorable Thie.
Yes, at 6 I'm going to leave. I've got another meeting.
No, we'll be done at 6 o'clock. It's from 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock.
No problem.
Yeah. He's going to attend the a PC meeting to adjudicate on the nomination. Thank you very much. We meet at 4.
Yes, Principal. Chair, is the chair still on the meeting? Okay, no. Mr. Brown?
Yeah,
Mr. Brown, please attend to Musa Alade. He or she is saying that there's no SASL interpreters on the platform, and the deaf people feel excluded. Please respond to them and find ways of assisting them. In the absence of the chair and the acting chair, I decided to take over. Thank you.
Wish you a good day and good afternoon.
Bye-bye.